Well, this is weird.
We're going to open our Senate Committee on Education. I am really excited to see all of you here. I'm looking forward to the day. We're going to have three bills up. And it's really great that we were able to coincide this with our Native American Day here at the Capitol, and having the opportunity to have some people with us who are already going to be here was really a pleasure for us. And I know all of us want to hear as much of the testimony. We're going to go through the order in which they were posted, which is 183, 182, and 13. And the reason for that is I'm urging my people on the first two bills to go quickly so we can have as much time as we need to listen to people. I have asked for an extension, and they have given us an extension at least till 6:30. So there should be ample opportunity for everyone who has come here to speak to be able to speak. We also have a hearing room because we have an overflow crowd. I think it's in hearing room B, next door. And so if you've signed up and you're in hearing room B and you're listening to this, understand that when your name gets called, you should start heading over here. So because that's the kind of thing that happens sometimes. And we will try to wait appropriate amount of time to get everybody here. Anything else? So I think that's it. Governor Brown is coming. She's on her way. 5 minutes now. So we're probably going to open all three of the bills because they all have something that she wants to talk about. And we're going to start. And then when she gets here, we'll take a little break and let her make her statement to the bills. And then we'll get back on the track with the order of how we're going again. Oh, she's here. That was impressive. Okay, now we can go right back to the order we were planning on going on. Governor, it's really nice to have you. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bills 183, 182, and 13. And I think we'll just let her speak instead of giving our general explanation of each one of those bills. We'll do that afterwards. But we're opening all three of those bills. And for public hearings, we want to thank you very much, Governor Brown. I know how important each of these bills has been to you. I appreciate your efforts in both making one of the groups come together to make it happen. I also know that your longstanding work with tribes in Oregon is appreciated by all the people in this bill, this room. And so, again, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, Governor Kate Brown, just delighted to be here with you today to testify on behalf of all three bills, Senate Bill 182, 183, and Senate Bill 13. Last fall, I had the opportunity to do a back-to-school visit, and I met with students and staff at Madison High School in Portland. This is a high school where the graduation rate is now at 74.3%, up from 73.8% from the previous year. The school is two-thirds students of color, and the students at Madison include immigrants, first-generation families, and those who are from a number of low-income homes. And the purpose of my trip was to talk with both students and staff about the challenges and obstacles that students face to graduating on time and what resources and tools they found to be helpful. But the story I'll share with you is about a student who said her mother was a flight attendant, and as a result, she was inspired to be a flight attendant. And it wasn't till student folks at the school, both educators, teachers, and staff, asked her about her interest in flying planes and helped connect the dots for her about what it would take for her to become a pilot. And now she wants to fly airplanes as well. So I think that's really, really exciting and what we want to see happening in our schools across the state. But I share this story because it was educators who helped make a strong connection between this student's education and her dreams. And it was the educators that helped inspire her to pursue new possibilities for her life. And I think our challenge in moving forward in this state in terms of education is to ensure that all of our students have the opportunity to achieve their dreams while graduating from high school with a plan for their future. And I think we can do this by creating a seamless system of education from cradle to career. I do support the Chief Education Office and state agencies coordinating more closely. Our agencies and education sectors from early learning through higher education must break from working in silos and be more cohesive to ensure that each Oregon child has the opportunities they need to be successful. Last summer, June of last year, I brought on a new person to tackle what I think needs to be an area of primary focus, and that's improving Oregon's high school graduation rates. His name is Colt Gill. We stole him out of Bethel School District. The school district was quite upset, but I think it's been a blessing for the state. In less than a year on the job, Colt has traveled to 32 of Oregon's 36 counties and spoken with more than 1,000 students, parents, community members, educators, and stakeholders to identify and scale up effective practices and recommend policies and priorities to improve Oregon's high school graduation rates. The results of his work are embodied in Senate Bill 183, which establishes a new partnership with schools, students, families, educators, and communities to create an early indicator warning system. This will work to ensure that students at risk of not graduating receive the support and the services they need from the earliest years of their education. The proposal also addresses why students aren't attending school and to make sure that schools and communities have the resources they need to address students suffering from trauma. And it creates opportunities for students in rural Oregon, low-income students, and students from historically underserved communities. I believe that we must replicate what works in communities across the state where we see pockets of excellence, such as culturally responsive teaching and career technical education pathways. When it comes to our high school graduation rates, we know that hands-on learning makes a difference. State graduation data shows students who took at least one technical education course had an 85% graduation rate versus 75% for all students. So we see this as absolutely critical. And then the second component, the second strategy that I would consider absolutely necessary to improving our high school graduation rates is ensuring that our educators have the tools and the resources they need to provide excellent education in the classroom. Excellent teaching matters because we want all of our students to learn from caring, competent, and culturally responsive educators. To do that, we need to ensure that educators have meaningful opportunities to expand their skills and ongoing opportunities for professional learning and leadership development. In order to support our students in reaching the goal of graduation, we must do more to support strong ongoing educator preparation and mentorship to cultivate a culturally responsive and diverse workforce across the entire state of Oregon. That's why I issued an executive order establishing the Council on Educator Advancement. The group represents accomplished teachers, school principals, I think the chair was on the group, community leaders, and school district superintendents. Since March of 2016, the council has examined key topics, research, and data related to a well-supported education workforce with a focus on equity and fostering education leadership in student learning. Senate Bill 182 would enact the Council's proposal for an equitable and sustainable model to extend support to educators across rural and urban school districts, leveraging resources through a new partnership between public education institutions and our nonprofit partners. So I'll stop right there. That's Senate Bills 183 and 182. Before I talk about Senate Bill 13, I want to recognize and thank the many representatives from our 9 federally recognized tribes who are in the Capitol today for Tribal Governments Day. As sovereign nations, it's critically important that state government continues to work with all of you and on behalf of our Native American, Alaska Native students in Oregon. I think we all know that we have a very rich Native history in this state, and it has been preserved with great care by our tribes and Native Americans across the state of Oregon. I had the opportunity when I was in Pendleton last year to tour an early childhood learning program where they were teaching all of the students the native language. And it was a wonderful hands-on learning opportunity for these students. And it was a great opportunity for them to explore a new culture that some of them had not been exposed to. And, of course, to immerse native students in their own culture as well. And I see the purpose of Senate Bill 13 to develop curriculum that helps share the stories, triumphs, culture, and contributions of Native Americans in Oregon. We believe that by incorporating more relevant and culturally responsive curriculum into our existing curriculum, it will make greater strides in keeping students engaged. Native American history is Oregon history, and it's essential curriculum that will benefit all of our students. So I urge your support of Senate Bill 182, Senate Bill 183, and Senate Bill 13, and look forward to signing these bills into law should the legislature see fit to pass them. Thank you so much, and I'm delighted to answer your questions. And I brought Lindsay Capps here in case you ask any difficult ones. So thank you.
So again, I want to thank you for taking the time today to be here, and I know that these are issues that are critical to you, have been in your whole life, in both in this building and outside of this building. So again, thank you for that. Is there any questions? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Good to see you, Governor.
Good to see you.
Just a comment, Ms. Chair, if I could. Something that has bugged me for many years now relative to graduation rate. We need to take a look at what the Department of Education has done as far as when they set the graduation rate, for example, algebra. It isn't, and Lindsay and I have had this conversation, it isn't the ability to work a algebra formula that's important, it's the thought process that it takes to do that, and there are many, many ways we can get there. And I'm just assuming on the front end that if a student is struggling anyway and they see algebra, they may give up. So we need to be more inventive and more creative as to how we get our students to the point we want them to get without having such a strict guideline. Just a thought.
Thank you, Senator Roblin. Senator Cruz, I totally agree, and I had this conversation in part with Senator Linthicum last week about the breadth and the depth that hands-on learning and practical experiences bring, and that how students learn differently, and if we can expose different students to the different types of learning paths, it's a win-win-win for everyone.
Okay. Just one more follow-up, and definitely not a question this time. I'm just saying.
You don't want me
He's
to
not
respond.
Giving me an answer.
No. I will invite you at some point, probably next month. The students from Roseburg High School are bringing their 3D printer up to demonstrate, and I think that will be a wonderful opportunity both for those students and for those of us in the building to see the sort of work that is already going on that we need to expand upon. So,
agreed.
Any other questions? Again, I know your schedule is very busy, and I know that you probably went faster than you should have to get here, because we were originally told it was going to be 15 minutes, and then it was 5, and then you were here. So we we appreciate all the effort that was done to get you here. So thank you very much, and thanks for commenting on the bills.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Yep. So we've opened all of the different bills, so we're going to start with Senate Bill 183. And so... Colt, do you want to come on up? And if you want to bring your panel, whenever you're ready to bring your panel, bring them on up. So whichever way you want to do that.
Actually, why don't I say a few words, and
sure.
Then I'll bring them up, and we'll meet the extra chair when they come. And we do have slides as well.
Oh, okay. We've got them here shortly.
Working on that. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colt Gill, Education Innovation Officer with the Chief Education Office. Thank you for this opportunity to introduce Senate Bill 183, the Graduation Equity Fund. The components of this bill were developed through community engagement, and they also align with some of the current statewide efforts to improve graduation outcomes in Oregon. So we're going to start with some community to introduce the purpose of this bill to you. But before I pass the microphone to some students that came today, I want to offer a quick reminder of the pressing need for a focus on graduation outcomes.
Have we got
the... working on the slides. It's okay. So I'll... There we go. Oh, nice. Thank you. Yep. No, that's Senate Bill 182. So in 2015, after spending 13 years in our schools from kindergarten to 12th grade, 26% of our students were not able to graduate on time. In 2016, we improved, but still 25% of our students were unable to graduate on time. In 2015, again, that's 11,826 individual students. 11,826 students whose future opportunities were limited by our inability to help them earn a high school diploma. If we do not innovate, if we don't take steps to change the way schools and communities support all of their children, this trend of low graduation rates, bottom five in the nation low graduation rates, will continue. We can count on it failing another 12,000 students a year, year after year, unless we alter our approach. At 12,000 students per grade level in our system right now, that's 150,000 at-risk students in our schools. So I see this as 150,000 reasons to act now to improve their lives forever. When talking to students, parents, community members, and educators in Oregon, it's very clear that students are impacted differently by our system, and equity quickly rises as a primary issue that we need to address. Creating a focus on equity and targeting our resources is important because of those 11,826 students our system failed to support on their path to graduation, they don't look demographically like the rest of Oregon. These are the statistics up here on the screen right now for some of our historically underserved students. The students being failed in our system are disproportionately students with disabilities, students living in tribal communities, students of color, students living in poverty, and they are disproportionately boys. Our schools are working for many students, but these numbers show they are not working for all students. So this summer, like Governor Brown said, I got to go to communities across the state to hear about barriers to graduation, as well as local success stories. Some of the most powerful conversations happened when I heard directly from students who were both successful and struggling within our system. So I reached out to several of these students, and four agreed to come today and share some of their experience as it relates to the components of Senate Bill 183. They'll formally introduce themselves when they come up here, but just really quickly, I want to let you know the students are Isaiah, who's here from the Grand Ron, to lend his support to this bill. And then our speakers, first we'll have Adrian, who is a future teacher that we all want to support on that pathway. He's from Medford, and he's part of the Life Art program there, along with some of his supporters in the audience, Rosario, Julissa, and Monique. And then we also have Liliana and Henry, who are leading a self-organized group of high school students in Lane County that they call the Student Task Force on Equity for Access to Higher Education. So I'll ask those students to come on up.
And knowing how organized you probably are, better than the rest of us, you know who's going in what order. So I'll let you decide how you go.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the community. My name is Adrian Chavez. I'm a senior over at North Medford High School, and as Gil mentioned, also hopefully a soon-to-be teacher for the Medford School District. And I appreciate being here today to share a youth voice perspective through the encouragement I received from Mr. Gil. I would like to address two reasons why I support Senate Bill 183. I believe that we need stronger communication between schools, students, and families. During the beginning of my high school career, I was solely supporting my own efforts to graduate. My parents divorced shortly before my freshman year, and they weren't able to assist my efforts in and out of class. I was frustrated and couldn't find reasons to continue. They didn't know how school worked, and honestly, neither did I. I also did not have anyone to speak to about my issues, so all teachers assumed I was failing on my own agenda. I also believe that relationships from a mentor with a similar cultural background can make a significant difference in graduation. My first 2 years of high school were shaky. I was getting into bad habits, hanging out with the negative crowd, and simply disassociating myself from school. I was buying spray cans at a local art store to, as you can say, paint my room when a familiar face poked me on the shoulder. Phil Ortega, who works for the Eagle Point School District, approached me asking what the spray cans were for. Of course, I was terrified. I didn't want to tell him what they were for, and he assured me that everything was okay. We spoke for a bit, and he opened the door for me to be involved with a program called Life Art, which is an art-based mentorship program in Medford. And Life Art stands for Live, Inspire, Freedom of Expression. Fast forward 2 years of involvement. I am now the gallery manager. I have the highest grades I've ever had, and also the highest academic attendance I've had throughout my entire years in school. It was the older mentors through this program that allowed this to happen. I felt comfortable speaking to them because they shared my culture and experience growing up. When I speak to staff at my school, I feel that they know what they're taught, not what I've been through. We should make a push to improve diversity throughout high school districts in Oregon. In closing, I appreciate your time and I urge you to support Senate Bill 183. It will support countless high school students throughout Oregon like myself. It scares me to think that that almost 3 out of 10 of my friends will not graduate when looking at the statistics. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Liliana Hernandez, and I am a sophomore at Springfield High School. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 183, which would help to improve Oregon's high school graduation rate. I have been serving on the Task Force for Equity and Access to Higher Education. This group has collected information about the challenges faced by high school students in the South Willamette Valley. There's a significant gap between high-performing and low-performing students. Among the students who are struggling, there's a cycle of frustration. They start to slip behind in school, and then it seems harder to catch up. So they become more disengaged. They reach a point where they don't think that school is worthwhile anymore. One way to help these students would be with programs that identify the at-risk population as soon as possible. Some students start having trouble as early as freshman year. The teachers and staff may not see these students falling behind, but their classmates know. If more specialists and resources could focus on the kids as they begin to have trouble early in their high school careers, it would be easier to get them back on track. And they would cause less disruption for the rest of the school. Some kids are dealing with tough circumstances at home. If a parent is laid off or struggling with a substance problem, or trying to overcome a language barrier, or attempting to get out of an abusive relationship, the student in that home is going to have some distractions. A program that could provide special attention to students from these homes would do a lot to improve the graduation rate. Schools need more counseling resources and more networks with community organizations that can help the families with the greatest needs. I am excited about the graduation equity program in Senate Bill 183. Right now, I see a fair number of students who have a lot of potential but who do not have access to stimulating classes, extracurricular activities, and career readiness programs that would inspire them to develop this potential. As a debater in high school and middle school, I've competed at a wide range of schools in Oregon, and I can see that some schools have more resources and programs than others. These differences can be discouraging for students at the underfunded schools. The graduation equity program can help to even out the differences and give every student a fair chance at success. I think it's valuable that Senate Bill 183 calls for consultation with local communities in order to determine the best way to invest resources. These conversations will help state officials to learn about the specific needs of students and teachers. I am grateful for the opportunity to speak with this committee, and I hope that you will support Senate Bill 183.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Isaiah Fisher. I'm an enrolled member in the Confederate Tribes of Sluts Indians. I'm also a member of the Confederate Tribes of Grand Island's Youth Council, and I really appreciate you guys being here today to let us discuss over this bill, and just have a wonderful afternoon.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, excuse me. My name is Henry Leininger. I am a junior at South Eugene High School, and I am here today to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 183. And I think the bottom line is just kind of, as Mr. Gill alluded to earlier, that this problem is urgent. It's dire and needs to be addressed imminently. And so I have been, you know, given the opportunity to be the chair of the Task Force on Equity to Access to Higher Education, which is a group of 15, 20 or so students that meets in Eugene, Oregon at the law school and convenes once or twice a month to discuss the problems that kind of pervade the community and specifically students that are having a troubled time in school. And we and Mr. Gill have worked together to figure out a couple problems and kind of isolated a few problems that we think are adequately mitigated by Senate Bill 183. And so some things that we've noticed are, first of all, that parents of students often do not have transparency with the teachers, with the schools, to know that the problems that their students might be facing. For example, if a student doesn't have a great grade in their class, oftentimes parents will not know that that problem exists and therefore do not have the ability to, you know, effectively address it, right? The second thing we've noticed is that oftentimes students can slip through the cracks early and then feel as though they've fallen behind their peers and get into that vicious cycle of not feeling the same motivation that they might otherwise have to try to get on the track to graduate. Another major problem that we've seen that actually was kind of alluded to by a prior speaker is the availability of certain clubs to help students want to pursue graduation. So I know he talked a lot about LifeArt being a great program that, you know, kind of gave him the motivation to continue in school and want to do more and be more motivated. This is unfortunately an opportunity that's not available to a lot of students in small and rural schools. So just as one anecdotal example, there's a student from Harrisburg in the task force that talked about how the only club at their school is the tractor club. And I mean, as fun as that sounds, it's not the thing that's going to appeal to everybody at the school, right? And so if we have, yeah, I agree. I'm definitely on your side. But if we had the $20 million that were allocated for discretionary spending by given communities, that would hopefully address and mitigate some of these problems, like the lack of availability of things that students want to participate in. One other major thing that Senate Bill 183 addresses that's pretty key is chronic absenteeism. I know just at South Eugene High School especially, which fortunately actually has a higher than average rate of graduation, there is still massive amounts of chronic absenteeism. And my friends at other schools tell me that they can really just skip class without any consequence. And that's something that Senate Bill 183 really addresses. And the last and final thing that I wanted to talk about is that some students are frustrated by the lack of engaging classes. And this is kind of something I talked about just a little bit earlier, which is that small and rural schools, for example, Cottage Grove, doesn't have the resources that this $20 million could help with to have engaging classes and engaging after-school extracurricular activities to keep people on the path that they want to be on. And for these reasons, I am firmly in support of Senate Bill 183. Thank you.
Thank you all. Questions, anyone?
No, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment. I was showing my bias on the comment.
On the
as a farmer, I do like tractors. So.
Exactly. Any other questions? What I want to say to each of you is that there are a lot of students in Oregon who would not be sitting where you are. Even if they felt good about what they wanted to say, they wouldn't choose to go up here and say it. And we have a lot of adults who have a hard time doing it. And you all did an exceptional job of presenting your ideas and stuff to us. And we appreciate that you're willing to do it. And number two, that you did it as well as you have done. So hopefully all the adults in the here we'll follow your good lead of, you know, short, succinct, and good information. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's clearly part of that. You listen well. Yeah.
So Colt can come back up. Does Salam, did you want to talk to this bill at all? Did you?
Yep.
Come on up.
If possible, we'd like to share a few details, Salam.
Absolutely. Salam. And Joel Fisher was also on the list. I think he's in the other room. So while you can get started, and if he makes it over,
okay. We'll
have him speak as well.
So again, for the record, I'm Colt Gill. Many thanks to Adriana, Liliana, and Henry, and Isaiah.
He's okay.
Deputy Superintendent Salam Noor and I would like to take a few minutes, if we have it, to share details of the bill with you. Is that okay?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Because I forgot to have my person... my assistant read it all over to begin with. I am really pleased that you came up to do that.
First, I want to be clear that much has been done across the cradle to career system in recent years to tackle graduation rates in Oregon. There we go. Schools are focused on the effort, and as a state, Governor Brown, the legislature, the Chief Education Office, ODE, the State Board of Education have all taken several steps to improve graduation outcomes. And I have a set of programs on the slide here that have been implemented over the last few years. I believe that the Graduation Equity Fund builds on these efforts, and Salam will speak to that in a few minutes here. My earlier visits with students that you heard from today were part of an effort to collect diverse voices of Oregonians to better guide our collective efforts to expand support and opportunity for our students. Participants across the state were welcoming, open, and willing to share local and sometimes very personal, challenging and stories about their students on their path to graduation. These meetings were full of passion, celebration, and sometimes tears. Many communities have invested time, energy, and resources in highly effective ways to support students on the path to graduation, and participant perspectives and innovative local efforts provide powerful examples to guide state policy and partnership with communities and schools. The entire report is available, and it's on the address at the bottom of that screen there. It's also on the Chief Education Office website. Oregon's communities are diverse. We wanted local perspectives on a statewide issue, so we traveled. And I was able to hear from over 1,000 people representing dozens of communities across 32 of our counties. Groups ranged in size, but were typically 10 to 12 people. We heard from students, parents, educators, community members, and those community members included business leaders, Regional Achievement Collaborative, and STEM Hub members, health professionals, elected officials, media, and affordable housing advocates, among others. Special care was taken to meet with members of historically underrepresented groups, LGBTQ, tribal members, students of color, and families navigating poverty to ensure all voices were heard at this table. We really only asked two questions. What do you believe are the critical factors impacting high school graduation for students and families in your community? And what are some promising programs or practices that you've seen engage and empower students on their path to graduation in your community? We met for 1.5 to 2 hours with each of these groups, and there was never a lull in the conversation. Conversation often continued into the parking lots. Our communities care deeply about the success of their children. We compiled the input and categorized it in a few different ways in the report. We learned that across the state, there was a common need for a focus on equitable practices and outcomes, and for the development of strong relationships, partnerships, and relevance for our students. With these in place, we could implement a number of strategies to prepare, support, and engage our students and families. In Oregon, part of our challenge is to identify economical, high-leverage investments that align with local student, parent, and educator and community members so that their children can succeed. We think that Senate Bill 183 aims to implement some of what we heard across the state in a way that allows schools and communities to tap into the resource and implement with some local flexibility. It supports students in three ways, and those are the three bullets there. Early indicator and intervention systems are used by close to 30 other states. Many states and districts that have implemented robust systems have seen year after year graduation rate increases of 2 to 4%. They attribute those gains to these systems. Our schools today in Oregon use data, but this is using data in new ways. It's called predictive analytics. It works in a similar way to Amazon and Netflix in their ability to predict what you might be interested in purchasing next. But it goes beyond state test scores. It looks at a student's attendance, behavior, and academic performance. Then it applies longitudinal data and research to predict whether the student's current data shows them to be on track for graduation or falling behind. It allows educators, students, and families to work together to intervene and support students before they're too far down a path that's causing them to be at risk for failing to graduate. The second one is trauma-informed practices. They help students who have endured adverse experiences, like a death in the family or hunger, or children who have been part of a marginalized group in our state. Trauma-informed practices alter the way staff interact with students and help these students feel that they are welcome and fully included in the school community. It also helps them build resiliency skills that can help students reach graduation and achieve their goals. Oregon currently has one of the highest student to counselor ratios in the country at 1 to 602, versus the recommended ratio of 1 to 250. To ensure our students are meaningfully supported in graduation from high school and moving on with a plan for their future, they need all staff, not just counselors, to be effective guides and provide systems such as restorative practices and trauma-informed practices along the way. The third effort in this bill is chronic absenteeism. It has a clear connection with reduced graduation rates. The statewide plan for addressing chronic absenteeism has a focus on building positive relationships between schools, families, and communities, providing engaging curriculum, implementing culturally responsive and sustaining practices, and developing partnerships between schools and community organizations that help provide holistic supports to students and families. So, Senator Roblin, I have a little bit more specifics about each of those three, but if you're on a tight timeline,
Pretty tight.
Can skip ahead. Do you want
we'll
me to skip
yeah.
past that?
Okay.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do now is recognize that Senate Bill 183 is a $20 million investment that provides high leverage practices to support students in Oregon. Senate Bill 183 also aligns closely and builds on efforts already underway at the Oregon Department of Education. And Deputy Superintendent Salam Noor can share more about that.
Thank you, Colt. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Salam Noor, Deputy Superintendent with the Oregon Department of Education. I really appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today to comment on this bill. And most importantly, I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of this conversation. It's timely, it's critical, and it's really essential to the quality of life in our state, I would say. As I think about, and my comments will be brief, I'm going to follow the student's lead here. As I think about this bill in particular, three things come to mind for me. One is focus. It focuses the effort in terms of the things that truly make a difference in improving outcomes for students. The second is that it validates what we know based on current investments, past investments. And third, it makes a commitment on the part of our states to continue to invest in what works, in best practices that we have learned about from research and also from voices of Oregonians and practitioners around the state. So the Grad Equity Fund specifically reinforces the priorities that we've established as a state. We have a graduation blueprint. You can see an image of it there. And next to it, we have a graduation brief that we publish annually when we publish our graduation data to highlight and celebrate and recognize the good work that's happening in schools and classrooms across the state. And of note is the improvement in graduation outcomes this year for all student groups. And I believe that's due to these specific investments that Cole discussed and these experiences that students described. So the intentionality here is really critical. And we see an alignment to the blueprint that we designed with practitioners, groups of educators, teachers, counselors, community members, nonprofits, community-based organizations, administrators, to really help us identify the key strategies that will move the needle on graduation outcomes and serve all students in the state of Oregon. So we're thrilled to see this alignment, and we think there's a lot of momentum here to build on. The fund, as Colt also alluded, will build on some of the initiatives and efforts that are already underway at the department that help improve graduation outcomes for historically underserved students, including the Tribal Attendance Pilot Project, the African American Black Student Success Plan, our EL plan that's supported by House Bill 3499 that focuses specifically on students that need additional supports, our English learner students that need additional supports and interventions. It focuses on chronic absenteeism and our educator equity plan. So these are resources that will continue to support the investments that we've made as a state and continue to build on the momentum that we currently have in place. The department is prepared to play a lead role in carrying out the implementation in partnership with Colt Gill, our Education Innovation Officer, Chief Education Office, and Lindsay Capps, and communities across the state. And I say communities because they're an integral part of this conversation and the work that needs to happen in schools and districts throughout the state. We see this as a collaborative effort between the state and local districts and communities, and it highlights our state's focus and commitment, specifically our governor's focus and commitment on improving outcomes for all students. And I'm really delighted to be a part of this work. I think it's exciting, and it's likely to get us to the outcomes that we want for our students and to be recognized for the investments that we're making nationally. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Sure. Chair.
Good. I need to just close here. So okay. In closing, I think that this community member during our visit from Redmond stated it well. I believe that the single student-centric factor contributing to student graduation rates is that students don't feel as though they matter. Their culture, interests, dreams, and goals don't matter. Students perceive this from educators, administrators, parents, and others. Individuals in poverty, minorities, and others are repeatedly told by society that they don't matter. And unfortunately, in many ways, our educational system compounds this. After all, when you don't have much, everything you do have is magnified. So if we truly want to improve our statewide graduation outcomes, and I think we all do, we must focus on all our students, especially those who have been marginalized. The creation of a graduation equity fund can begin to target our resources and our strategies in a way that helps our educators ensure that every student in our schools knows that they matter, knows that they're welcome, and knows that we want to be there to help them succeed. So with that, I just want to thank you for your time today. I'm happy to take questions, but I know that you have a heavy agenda, and we're also happy to meet with you separately as needed to answer any questions.
Thank you. Joel.
Senator Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher. On behalf of the Oregon Business Association, I'm their senior policy analyst, although I'm not actually senior to anybody there. I know I need to come up with a new joke. I think some of you have heard that one before. also speaking on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries, the two associations are joining and we have a shared agenda. I'll be very brief. We're in support of this bill. We need to bring our graduation rates up. Obviously, a lot of really good work has gone into it. Improving our graduation rates is very important for the health of our state. A robust education system is very important for the health of our state. And would just like to register our support. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you all.
Thank you.
So with that, we're going to move on to Senate Bill 182. I guess we're going backwards. We're going to get to 13 eventually. See, so we're going on. We'll have a short explanation by our administrator. And is this the first group?
First group I have is Lindsay.
Right. Lindsay's here. Okay, yeah. Come on up, Lindsay. And short explanation.
Yeah, I have it.
Does she want the picture? Go ahead and go with the summary, quick summary, and then we'll get started.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, this bill repeals the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning and establishes the Educator Advancement Council. Excuse me. It specifies the council's duties and program requirements, including the establishment of regional networks. It permits the Chief Education Office, the State Board of Education, and the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission to establish rules in support of the council. Changes the name of the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning Fund to the Educator Advancement Fund, and permits the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to award scholarship money to culturally and linguistically diverse teacher candidates. It directs the Early Learning Division to establish policies and practices relating to early childhood professional development.
Lindsay, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Lindsay Capps, Chief Education Officer. We are proud to be here today and associate ourselves, obviously, with the previous panel of students and education leaders. We introduced both Senate Bill 182 and 183 in keeping with the call under Oregon's equity lens for explicitly identifying disparities in education outcomes for the purpose of targeting areas for action, intervention, and investment. So as you look at Senate Bill 182, Senate Bill 183, and certainly Senate Bill 13, these will advance our shared efforts across Oregon communities to improve graduation outcomes and make ongoing progress toward achieving the vision that every student graduate high school with a plan for their future. Both of these bills work in tandem to support communities and educators in having a greater impact in serving our underserved children and by developing coherent systems and practices that through strengthened innovative partnerships and collaboration will achieve and sustain long-term solutions to persistent gaps in achievement and opportunity. I just wanted to review that again to show the connectivity between the legislative proposals before you today. The equity lens also talks very clearly about the importance that for an equitable education system to provide teachers with the tools and support to meet the needs of each and every student. And that is really the focus of the Council for Educator Advancement that came together with the one of our co-chairs here today, former Representative Betty Comp, with the purpose of really addressing a critical need across our educational system, which is that we are going through a very strong and significant shift in our demographics and the skills and competencies and supports that educators need to ensure the success of every student need to be supported through a more robust system. And that's in part what we are here to talk about today. I want to just briefly touch on the governor's comments earlier in terms of her executive order creating this council, just to talk a little bit about the specific charges it was given that I think help frame the recommendations that you'll hear today. The first thing was really to make sure that we have a more equitable and sustainable funding model to leverage and distribute Network for Quality Teaching and Learning resources, to move us away from a competitive grant system that fund pockets across the state to something where we can serve all educators. We want to see greater alignment between teacher preparation and efforts to provide mentoring and induction and ongoing professional learning and leadership development for educators across their career. That is a critical value, and it certainly reflects our commitment to building a more seamless system in supporting our educators. We also talked through this executive order about leveraging educator voice, expertise, and leadership, as well as local, regional, higher education, nonprofit, and philanthropic institutions in helping to provide these supports for educators, and ensuring that this systemic approach to continuously improve practice has at its center educator leadership, leadership in helping us achieve more equitable outcomes and improving professional practice. So with that, I will turn it over to our co-chair, the Honorable Betty Comp.
Thank you, Lindsay. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. It's nice to see all of you, and I want to thank all of you for your service, and it is wonderful to be retired. So there is life outside of this building. I am here to in support. Yes, Senator Cruz. Yes, some of us can get back to the farm. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 182. We have been working as a group. Oh, good, here's our picture. Since about June last year, we were working every month because we had a tight timeline with this legislation. And what I would share with this picture is the fact that the majority of the people in this picture are teachers. And their voice was soundly heard, and it was they bring such a dynamic that we miss sometimes here, particularly at the legislature and in sometimes in other organizations within education. And we talked immensely about the value of that teacher voice. And what, as Linda just shared, I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit, Hilda. I never do anything in a straight path. But that what this the purpose of this bill is to streamline resources. We have our title funds from our federal government. We have our state funds, and then we have also interest in our nonprofit groups, our
philanthropic.
That's it, philanthropic groups that are very much, as Joel just said, groups of people that want to see us do better, and so we're all working together. And the bottom line is we want excellence in teaching and learning. I think all of you, if you want to go to that next slide, Hilda, because our goals are in this book that I think most of you have, a presentation of our information. But the one thing that I want to share in closure is that we have been working on these kinds of education bills for quite some time at the legislature. And in 2007, we did the beginning teacher and administrative mentorship program. Senate Bill 290 in 2011, again, looked at raising the standards of practice. 2012, I mean, the list just goes on. We have recommendations designed to support teaching and learning again. And then the work that this bill is at the beginning of is from House Bill 3233, and some of us, that was a long bill talking about the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning, where that name change will occur with this legislation. I know you all have a vast background in education, and I want to thank you. And Our other co-chair of our committee is Michelle Oakes, and I believe she's on the phone, and she has a few comments.
Yes, she can be on the phone. She does, and she is on the phone.
She's in Bend, and sometimes they get snow over there.
Well, she thinks it's all the same panel. We thought she was the next panel.
Oh.
We thought Lindsay was all by himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, he could have done it.
It's okay.
Glad to have you here.
Hello, this is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. This is Senator Roblin. You're welcome to the crowded room of the Education Committee. And you get to be up.
Me. I'm next.
You are there.
Oh, it's the time.
Can you hear me, Senator Roblin?
We can.
Tell her to turn off her feed.
You can turn off your feed, though.
So, Chair Senator Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Michelle Oakes, and I'm the Mentor Program Coordinator for Bend Lapine and Crook County Schools. I'm also the co-chair of the Council on Educator Advancement.
Hi, Michelle. This is Senator Roblin. You're welcome to the...
You can turn that off if it's on a separate...
Link. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify remotely. For the Council's work, it was imperative to have strong teacher voice at the table. The teachers shared their passion, were the voice and lens into the classroom, and represented their students and colleagues while thinking about the impact on all Oregon educators. Knowing that the quality of our educators impacts the level of student success, it is critical that teachers have a choice, have a voice in their professional learning. How do they improve their practice in order to best meet the needs of their students? This was a critical part of the Governor's Council's work. There are three things that will likely change for teaching and learning as a result of the report. Number one, all novice teachers will receive mentoring and induction for their first 2 years. Number two, teacher voice and leadership will be an essential component in defining both regional and district level professional needs, as well as shaping educational policy. Third, the alignment of pre-K college will support a higher quality educator workforce who enters the field more knowledgeable and prepared to teach our students. These three components will support all of our educators as we recruit and retain the best teachers who are accomplished and think deeply about the craft of teaching. ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, has numerous references to teacher leadership. This allows us to think differently about how to channel federal funds into leadership and professional learning. While it is important to continually improve teacher practice, it is also important that those closest to teaching and learning share their voice and weigh in on policies that affect them. As we begin to strengthen teacher voice at the district and regional level, it's also going to be imperative that we have regular and meaningful dialogue around local and state policy. This partnership would strengthen Oregon education. One issue that affects teachers is the level of support that they receive during their first 2 years of teaching. Research shows that teachers who are part of a mentoring and induction program feel supported, develop lifelong learner mindset, and stay in the teaching profession longer. When we support all of our novice, first and second year teachers and administrators in their new roles in education, we increase their effectiveness, we strengthen instruction, we embed reflection in our practice, and thus we improve student learning. The return on our investment is high and noticeable. As our novice teachers come to us with an array of experiences, we must ensure that they are supported, that they are responsive to their students' needs, and that we are training, recruiting, and retaining the highest quality educators. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, and it was enjoyable working with you as one of the co-chairs of the committee. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Senator
Wilson. Okay. So, okay, you're bringing them up. That's great. I won't invite Randy and all those others up. They're coming on their way.
Good afternoon, Senator Rowland and members of the committee. My name is Anna Gomez Corbales, OSU, Oregon State University is my affiliation. I want to share with you the importance of equity for this bill. It's the backbone, actually, of our work and effort during this month. And we, actually, I want to go back and say hello to all the students, educators, and the members of the tribes. Because that's part of the conversation here is if we are in the process. It's coming? Here. Of building career pathways, we need to reflect what our demographics in Oregon are telling us. And many of our students, they don't see themselves when they have teachers in the room that can reflect the culture, the language, and their history. So we believe, strongly believe, that our future educators are here and across the state, and they represent different backgrounds, different racial experiences, different cultural experiences, and those are the teachers that we want as part of this pathway. But in order to build the pathway, we need to be aware of the limitations and barriers that those students are going to face when they start with the dream of becoming educators. Part of the barriers become are economical, but many of the barriers are coming from them seeing a system that is not necessarily reflecting who they are and what they want. So we want, with this bill, to open the doors for those students across the state to start dreaming with the career. We also want to partner with local organizations and universities and institutions that are currently doing this work to actually create the synergy and bring more opportunities for the students across the state. In order to build the path and increase those graduation rates that we were talking about, we need to be careful with in the way our professionals, our future educators, are believing or learning about culturally and linguistic responsiveness. And that's part of the bill. We want the resources and the mentors from universities and institutions ready to support the future educators.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Laura Scruggs. I'm a brand new reading intervention teacher, 9 days now, at Briggs Middle School in Springfield, and I'm a member of the Oregon Education Association Board of Directors. Professional learning is the bridge that links our 10 recommendations together. It's the foundation for change and the means by which we will disseminate a common understanding of culturally responsive practices and skillful teaching. Our plan increases support for professional learning based on district readiness, and it's essential that we meet districts where they are to help propel them forward. We can't force them into the box and expect them to be able to move from where we think that they are. To positively impact student achievement, we must build understanding between our school staff and our partners and providers. We must focus our work to keep culturally responsive practices at the center of every decision. We must embody shared leadership and lift the voices of our teachers. And we must embed professional learning within the job of teaching while focusing on collaboration and improved practices. So together, we will engage teachers and administrators in designing and implementing professional learning that improves every student's educational experience as well as our educational outcomes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Hitz. I'm Dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State University. I've been asked to speak to this priority regarding partnerships. It will come as no surprise to you that if we're going to create a really good and strong education profession, we really need universities and the school districts to work more closely together. And that's part of what this bill is all about. And it's an attempt to create a seamless system. So they're working together in terms of recruiting great people into the profession, preparing them well, licensing them in the proper ways, and also then providing good ongoing professional development. Universities can't do that alone. School districts can't do that alone. We have to work together. And this bill actually extends work that you people that you have supported in the past through the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning, and you have supported Teach Oregon. Thank you very much. And we want to maintain that, extend it in the sense of doing more work with community colleges, more work with early childhood education as well. And just a personal note, I can tell you that as dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State, the Teach Oregon work was fundamentally important to us and is fundamentally important to us in our efforts to recruit a more diverse population of students into the profession and to really create better clinical experiences as well, and then to take that on and also create better professional development for in-service teachers. At the national level, our accrediting body has seen this as such a priority that they've created much higher standards than ever before for teacher education programs to create partnerships that are meaningful in the way that I've just described. And I can tell you that we could not have met those new high standards if we had not had the help of Teach Oregon. So I thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much. Well, any questions for any of these groups to this point? Not seeing any. Go ahead. Thank you. So Hilda, David, and Salam, I think that's the group.
We can keep the slides on.
Yeah. We'll ask you to keep it rolling because we've got a long list of people come.
If I could move it forward, I would. David?
Chair Roblin, committee members, for the record, I'm David Mandel, Acting Early Learning System Director, and I can't tell you what a great pleasure and privilege it is to be here today to talk on behalf of Senate Bill 182. The great recommendations and the really wonderful content of SB 182 are really testament to how far and how quickly the conversation around early learning has moved in this state. There's now really strong and broad recognition of the importance of quality early learning experiences for putting young children on the path to success in school and life. And a growing recognition, I think this is what's so important about this bill, that that quality early learning experiences are all about the quality of interactions between children and the adults who work with them. There are over 22,000 individuals in Oregon who are working with young children in early learning settings, and these are really diverse settings, everything from a preschool classroom in a public school to a Head Start program to mom-and-pop nonprofit child care programs to child care in folks' homes. And one of the really great strengths of this workforce is its diversity. One of the things I always like to point out about the early learning workforce is that it's actually more diverse than Oregon's adult population, mm-hmm. but somewhat less diverse than Oregon's 0-5 population. Mm-hmm. And Oregon's early learning work, these are incredibly dedicated folks who work long hours for little pay, and I think up until fairly recently, often with quite little recognition of the importance and value of this work. While we've as a state and as a nation come a long way in recognizing the value of this work and its potential long-term impact, our support for this crucial part of the education workforce has been traditionally limited. Limited pay and opportunities for professional development, limited access to coaching and job-related professional development, limited access to professional development that's culturally specific or in a language other than English. And where there are opportunities for certificates or degrees, these are really often not set up in ways to meet the needs of a working workforce. SB 182 begins to address these challenges. Not only does it recognize the need to align and connect the supports for the early learning workforce with those of K-12, but also recognizes the need to address the unique needs of this workforce by building educational pathways for early learning professionals to access college credentials, degrees, and certificates, by focusing on coaching and mentoring opportunities that address the broad needs of this diverse early learning workforce, and increasing access to training and professional development that is culturally responsive and linguistically diverse. I'm also really excited the way that this bill creates tremendous opportunities for the Early Learning Division and the Early Learning Council to partner and collaborate with the Chief Education Office, the Council on Educator Advancement with HEC, and also with Oregon's Institutions of Higher Learning. So this is really just a wonderful opportunity, so really thank you for this opportunity to be here today.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin and members of the Education Committee, Senate Education Committee, my name is Hilda Rosselli, and I'm a former classroom teacher and a educator prepare faculty member and a dean of a college of education, but I currently serve as the policy director in the Chief Education Office for around college and career readiness and educator advancement. It was also my honor to help staff this amazing council that met every month and made incredible progress in a short amount of time in order to deliver recommendations to Governor Kate Brown by the deadline of November. Soon into the process, this council recognized that the size and geographic location of school districts and the incredible need for state resources to support statewide professional learning would require the development of a much more nimble, seamless, and efficient governance and coordination model, a process that could be possible if we better strategically aligned our funds and resources, worked together at regional and local levels, and looked at the support of the partners that could come to the table in terms of providing resources and expertise from higher education, professional associations, community-based organizations, and nonprofit partnerships and philanthropic organizations. Indeed, Senate Bill 182 actually enacts the Council's proposal around developing an equitable and sustainable model that will extend services to educators in both rural and urban communities better than we've been able to do up to date or to date. It will also leverage those resources through new partnerships that are driven by the local needs and by the educators. Planning for this transition is underway right now in collaboration across our state education agencies and in consultation with key partners. We already anticipate amendments that we will be bringing to this bill that may look at our timing of how to roll something like this out. It's quite complex. We want very much to preserve an integrity of services that have been funded by the network, but to also move towards a better, more equitable model of helping those priorities be reached. In essence, also, this will allow us to, as was mentioned earlier, to reestablish the network fund and moving it into something called this Educator Advancement Fund. But it also establishes a council with very clear responsibilities. We researched this carefully, looking at mechanisms that allow a group to form that would actually be responsible for looking at the priorities of educators and distributing funding across the state in a more equitable way. It also looks at the inclusion of early learning and the professional needs that we can better meet if we look together at their needs. Also, this bill establishes scholarships for culturally or linguistically diverse candidates who are already enrolled in educator preparation programs. This work would be done in conjunction with the Oregon Student Access and Completion arm of the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission, and we are already beginning that work and talking through how that would work. We have defining and supporting roles for the Chief Education Office to provide research and resources necessary to the Council as it moves through a transition stage, and to also answer the key questions of what are those practices that make the most sense, what are the more equitable ways of making sure that all educators are supported across their entire career. And it also defines responsibilities around how the Oregon Department of Education, which has done a great job of managing the existing network funds, can help transition this work forward. And for that, I look to my colleague, Deputy Superintendent Salam Noor.
Thank you, Heather. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Salam Noor, Department of Education. And I really appreciate the opportunity to comment on this bill before you today. You've heard a lot from many of the presenters about, you've heard words such as systemic, alignment, streamlining, leveraging, bringing resources together from multiple entities, private and public. And at the core of all of this is really collaboration and serving teachers. As I reflect on my own participation on this committee in particular, I am really grateful for the many talented educators, both teachers, practitioners in all facets of education, educational leaders at all levels, and the great work that they do every day to support students and contribute to their success. I was really moved by the power of teacher voices, if you will. So the recommendations that are coming before you today have been very heavily impacted by teacher voices and practitioners that bring such depth and richness to the conversation and relevance, most importantly. And I really appreciated the place-based perspective. So we have teachers from varying places around the state, and they were able to give us an insight into the needs of all students and communities and the importance of this work for their goals and aspirations for their students. I want to connect this work from a systemic point of view to the conversations we've been having around the state on the Every Student Succeeds Act. We presented to the Senate committee in the past about our efforts and the community conversations that we've held. Over the course of a year, we've had about 20 community conversations, and many of those conversations focused on how we leverage the federal resources to support teachers.
We have some kids leaving. I felt bad about so. Yes. We got to get. We have one more bill, so we would like to get to it
very
fairly quickly.
Very quickly, I promise. So I just wanted to share with you how these conversations with teachers in particular in many corners around the state have really reinforced the purpose and the focus of this bill. As when we asked teachers about what strategies should be considered in our state's Every Student Succeeds plan to promote high-quality professional learning for all educators, we heard recommendations such as the need for sustained investment in high-quality professional learning that is intentional, relevant, and tailored to their needs, moving away from just workshop models of professional learning to models where teachers share, provide ongoing support, coaching and guidance, and collaborate together. Giving educators tools and strategies to problem solve for their needs is more helpful than giving them more information. Leveraging technology to provide more professional learning opportunities, which don't require face-to-face learning and don't require travel. Again, utilizing regional networks, local networks, resources, and focusing on place-based learning for the educators as well. We also heard the need for mentoring for all new teachers and administrators, and the importance of professional learning around culturally relevant teaching and learning and practices. Senate Bill 182 and the Council recommendations presented today also mirror some of the feedback that we received from a teacher advisory committee that we established over almost 2 years ago. It has 30 teachers from around the state, and we bring them together 3 or 4 times a year to help advise us and give us some perspective on their needs and their students' needs and how education actually plays out in their community. They echoed the same recommendations and the same needs when we engaged them in this conversation. Again, this is really a model of collaboration and interagency planning between the Department of Education, Chief Ed Office, and other state agencies that touch and affect education. It builds on existing investments, as Hilda indicated, and current work, and it actually takes it to the next level of enhancing it and improving it. We've already begun to have conversations about how we transition this work in the most effective way to continue to support our teachers in the meantime while we move to a new system that will serve them even better. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
I see no questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We're going to move on to 13. We thought this was going to take about 30 minutes less, but sorry about that. So I apologize to all of the people who have been waiting for 13. It is going to start now. You can stay because you were going to start open that up a little bit. And
they were going to start with tribal.
No, they wanted this first. So you can go ahead, and then we're going to have our tribal leaders from our 9 recognized tribes as the next group up. So go ahead and give her an introduction to this bill.
Okay. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Salam Noor, Department of Education, and joined by?
April Campbell, I'm the Indian Education Specialist at the Oregon Department of Education.
Ramona Halcomb, Indian Education Specialist at ODE.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity. We will be brief. The governor has spoken very eloquently about the importance of this bill, and this is an opportunity for all Oregon students to learn about the rich tribal and native history of the state of Oregon. ODE and the tribes have been working towards this effort for many, many years, I will say, and we are really glad. We're delighted to be here before you today to discuss this bill and to learn. One of the primary purposes for us here today is to continue the work that we have done with the tribal, with the tribes and tribal leaders and the education cluster in particular, to better understand the need for this curriculum, to better understand how we implement this curriculum. So we're here as listeners, we're here to learn and to continue this collaboration with tribal leaders and to continue to hear voices and perspectives about this work, and we are committed to partnering and continuing to engage our tribes in the development and implementation and the continued rollout of this work. So we're just delighted to be here and look forward to the testimony that you're about to hear.
Very good. Thank you very much. So we have leaders from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla and the Confederated, Valerie Schultzer. Come on up. Yes, Valerie, come on up. And Cheryl Kennedy. Is Cheryl here or in the other room? You're doing Cheryl. Come on up. So we're going to start with the tribal leaders of the nine tribes of Oregon that are here. So. And who else did I miss? Modesta Minthorn.
Is she here?
Is Modesta here? Is she in the other room? Or? Oh, there you go. Come on up. And we really appreciate having you here. Thanks for your patience as we're getting ready for this one. But your voices are really, really important to us. And as we get ready to start doing this curriculum, we're looking to the nine tribes to really be helpful in helping us make the best curriculum possible for our tribes. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Roblin, committee. I just want to say, this bill has been a long time coming. And we, working in the education field for over 20 years, and especially.
Oh, and you do have to say your name, I'm
sorry.
That's okay. Okay. Go ahead.
For the record, my name is Valerie Switzler, and I'm from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs.
Thank you.
And I just want to say that this has been a long time coming. I've been working in the language revitalization field for over 20 years. And throughout the past couple of decades, we have noticed that a lot of our elders are leaving us, and they left us this work to carry on. And we used to be good neighbors at one time, the people around us, the communities around us, and we could count on one another to help us through difficult times, and we would look to each other. But we've lost that because we don't have that connection anymore. Not the people, the communities around us don't know, who we are as a tribe, who Umatilla is a tribe, or who the other tribes are. We don't have that anymore, and we go out to the root fields and we can't dig because it's blocked off, and they don't recognize that we have certain rights that we had reserved for since time immemorial. And because the general knowledge of who we are as a people isn't there anymore, all of this is getting lost, and even with our own children, it's getting lost. So our kids don't know that over there, that's where you can go dig bitterroot, or over there you can go dig biscuit root, and you can go pick huckleberries over there, and up the ways is a choke cherry patch. But, we don't have that good neighbor relationship anymore, and so we need to educate not only our own children but all children of Oregon, to recognize who we are as people, who we are as not a minority group, sir, but as a distinct nation upon ourselves, each and every one of us in the nine tribes. And so I come in support of this bill, and I appreciate the time that you give me to talk. And, I hope that, this will come to a favorable outcome, because I know we've been working on it a long time.
Well, and thank you for sharing just who you are, how you dress is very important for all of us to see and to recognize the art and the culture that is expressed in even how you're dressed. And I think we have lost a lot of that, too. So thank you for being here.
Nich Pachwai, Inishwa Nisha Pitna Wolat Maya Kunashwa Nich Yahweh Kni. Good afternoon, Chair Roblon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Modesta Minthorn, and I'm the Director of Education for the Confederated Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation. I am also a recently appointed member of the State Board of Education, but I am here today on behalf of the Umatilla Tribes to support Senate Bill 13. Since the 1970s, the Umatilla Tribes have worked to bring our history, language, and culture into the surrounding school districts in eastern Oregon. Despite some real challenges over the years, we now have strong relationships with the Pendleton School District and other districts close by. In fact, last March, Governor Brown visited Pendleton's Walk to Language program. She learned to say a few words in our Umatilla language in a program that serves all kindergarten students in the city. It is a historic partnership between our tribe, the state, and the district. Years ago, we never imagined we would see a governor practicing our language in a classroom in the Pendleton School District. But now that we know that what can be done through collaboration, we are excited to work with the state to build on that progress through Senate Bill 13. I think we can all agree it is important to provide curriculum that is historically accurate. CTYR is one of two treaty tribes in the state of Oregon. Each of the 9 federally recognized tribes in Oregon are a sovereign with distinct languages, customs, values, beliefs, and independent relationships with the state and federal government. And Senate Bill 13 provides an opportunity for each of us to educate Oregonians about who we are as a people. But there are other benefits that intersect with our legislative goals to increase graduation rates. Our Tribal Education Department provides services for about 607 Native American students in area school districts. And based on my experience, I believe Senate Bill 13 will result in increased academic achievement and graduation rates for those students and their peers. When the state invests in culturally based education and provides historically accurate curriculum, Native American students will get reinforcement of their identity. And with that reinforcement, teachers will see enhanced socio-emotional well-being. Studies and classroom experience will tell you this positively affects math and reading test scores. So in the end, Senate Bill 13 will help our tribe to tell our story using our voice, and it will help you to create policy change that some say is needed to increase graduation rates throughout our state. We urge a do pass recommendation to your colleagues in the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Roblin, rest of the committee. My name is Ren Lino, and I'm the Tribal Council Chairman of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Round. I want to thank you very much for this opportunity to speak with you today. As a sovereign nation, the tribe has worked hard to build positive government-to-government relationships across all levels of government. We are proud to have a strong relationship with the state of Oregon. The Confederated Tribes of Grand Round support Senate Bill 13, which directs the Department of Education to develop a curriculum relating to the Native American experiences in Oregon and professional development related to that curriculum. There are 9 federally recognized tribes in Oregon. The history of our people who have lived in Oregon since time immemorial is significant for all Oregonians, but today it is either ignored or poorly described in our schools. Most Oregon students learn more about the Sioux and Apache, and no disrespect, but they don't learn about the Umpqua, the Molal, or the Rogue River, the Kalapuya, or the Shasta, or any of the other 9 tribes. Senate Bill 13 is an investment in Native American communities. The 9 tribes in Oregon have invested in local schools, and we still are living with dire outcomes. For example, the current Native American graduation rate in Oregon is only 56.4%, and our children are not performing at grade level for many subjects, including basics like math and science. Many teachers are not prepared and equipped to discuss issues surrounding Indian country, such as tribal sovereignty, tribal government, land removal, termination, and restoration. Some of the history is complicated and it can be difficult to discuss. Grand Round has always recognized the importance of teaching Native history in Oregon. The tribe has developed a history curriculum because of the need for historical, accurate, and cultural relevant curriculum in Oregon schools about Oregon's first people. In 2014, this curriculum was provided to the Willamina School District, and now is in 10 school districts, and I believe it's being taught in approximately 50 schools. The tribe thought the Spirit Mountain community has also made funds available for the other tribes to develop tribal-specific history curriculum. It is the tribe's goal to build respect and understanding of tribal history and culture, and to give all our youth the opportunity to learn about Oregon's Native history and to foster a cultural respective representation of Native Americans. In closing, the Confederate Tribes Grand Round encouraged support of the Senate Bill 13 because it will have a significant impact on the lives and education of Native people and all Oregonians. It would also correct the years of omission from Oregon's history and curriculum of 9 sovereign tribes. With this bill, we can really focus on efforts towards what is really important, and that's the education of our children. And I'd just like to say on a personal note, Cheryl and I are kind of the senior council members at Grand Round. I've been there 21 years. Cheryl's right behind me. You know, and every year it seemed like we brought this up. When are we going to see the history of Grand Round, history of Native American tribes in Oregon? And that's why we took effort, and I'm very proud to be the chair of the Grand Round who stepped out to do this. But it's not just about our history and our culture. It's about giving back the pride to our kids when they go to school. That they maybe it will give them that extra thing to stay in school and to graduate.
I agree with you 100%, and I hope that it leads to that and even more, because I think when we understand each other better, it makes us all stronger. So thank you for being here, and we really do appreciate it. Any questions for this panel? Again, thank you very much for being here all day, and for sharing your stories, and expect that the Department of Education will be getting a hold of you more to get some more of those stories, because the way we learn about each other, and I think you and your tribes know that as well as anyone, is through the stories we tell, and we've got to make sure that we tell the stories correctly, and that will be with your help we can do that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Irvana Little Eagle and Arlita Roan. And I think we'll bring up Rep. Sanchez as well. finally. In general, just so you know, in general, we try to defer to our other legislators, but those bills took a little longer, and then I felt that I should defer to my tribal leaders before I so that's why you're with this panel. So, and I appreciate it that you're here. So, and I know your tribal history too, so you know, it's good. It's nice to have you here, and thank you. So with that, whoever wants to go first. See, they're going to defer to you. That's really nice.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Tana Sanchez, for the record. I am a representative from House District 43, North and Northeast Portland, and I'm also the Director of Family Services at the Native American Youth and Family Center in Portland. I'm gonna briefly read this thing, and then I do want to talk to you just a little bit more. So today offers a meaningful opportunity to move forward in the inclusion of Native American curriculum in our schools and actualize an important piece of the American Indian Alaska Native State Plan. Senate Bill 13 will bring tribes to the table and offer a perspective from local natives about not only historical, but just as importantly, contemporary issues related to culture, government, and our longstanding shared history in this place we call Oregon. The history of Oregon deserves to be told from the perspective of all of its residents, in particular from its first residents. Sometimes history is hard to hear and even harder to tell. What I know as a parent, though, is that when Native children are exposed to their own history in school, they have a greater understanding of who they are. It makes sense to them because they fit in history. And, you know, I'm going to be perfectly blunt, and the legislature will find this out, too. I'm really blunt. Every day, non-Native kids see that in history. They can see themselves in history all the time. They can look in those pictures. They can hear those names, and they see themselves in the history all the time. the very first time one of my foster kiddos heard about his tribe, and Chair Lino was correct, it was a Lakota tribe. The very first time he heard about that, some story that a brave teacher was telling in his history class, he was so excited. And he told me about it for days. He talked about it for days, that they were talking about the history of his tribe, the Lakota tribe. And he actually spoke in class. He actually brought up things that he knew about his own culture. And I think about that, and I think about how amazing would it be for all Native kids, in particular those kids who are from here, from this state, who don't hear anything about their own culture. How amazing would that be for them to be able to hear about their culture, their contributions, the things that they know about their own people. And again, you know, that history can be hard because everything wasn't always easy and wasn't always great, but it's going to be so very, very important for them to know that, you know, their ancestors had a huge part of making this country what it was, what it is. And it'll be so amazing for them in the future to recognize that even though there were some really hard decisions made in law that really affected our people very negatively, there's also been some amazing decisions made. And that's the thing that excites me, because in reality here, I'm only the second Native American legislator to ever be in this House. And that's not even a tribal member from this state. The first one was Jackie Taylor, who was a citizen Potawatomi. I'm Shoshone Bannock. Even though my family married into the Grand Ronde, we're still not from here. There are no people from this state who have actually been in this legislature. It's so very, very important for people to be able to move forward and have an education that makes sense to them, that helps them understand who they are and have some pride in what they're doing and how they're moving forward. We've been working on that for so very, very long, but I just think it's such an important thing, and I really do believe the Senate Bill 13 is going to make a huge difference, and I implore you to move that forward if you can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nih Pachwai and Jair Lamashaba Aichi, Snaman T. Champawanichi, Oregon. Kumanus Payuk Othana Shakes Chikuk of Mau Kpailau and the Kushmish Hatach Shikopam Ani Anisha Tamanwit Ataskuna Nami Mianasma Bamashukata Shinpawa and Amna Bawa Mini Bawa Kapan Tsumst Tananawich Naman, Oregon Pama. I am very happy for what's going on today. I'm sorry. I am Arlita Roan. I'm a lead language instructor for the Warm Springs Confederated Tribes, and I'm a resident of our tribes, our Indian reservation, since the time we became a government. And that's another thing, you need to educate yourselves, those of you that are working for everything here in the state of Oregon, plus the Indian people. You need to know that each of these nine tribes are separate governments. We're not all to be treated the same regarding law, except for something like this, where our leadership will also be involved, like your government-to-government. My director and tribal councilwoman, Valerie Switzler, I talked to her a lot, and I'm glad she got where she's gotten. And she was placed, the education director was removed from our government with the tribe. And so she had to attend those kind of things. And I told her, don't be afraid. Go talk for us. Go talk for the language. Go talk for the schools to teach about our, have some lessons to teach about the Indian people of this state. You guys work together and work hard and getting that done. Now it's done. And I'm glad they did really work hard together, the nine tribes, and to get this to be understood, and it is very much needed for our children. They don't know who they are. When somebody asks them questions about, do you live in teepee? And of course, the kid answered, no, that was those Indians. They lived in there. and see, they don't even know. And oh, they set those up at Lincoln's at the Payum Shop powwow. Not me. I don't live in the teepee. Then we just set it up and we have celebration. See, they don't know that. And but in my time, I grew up back in since 1938 on the reservation. I seen everything what went on and the changes and all. And it was some of it is not very good, colorful story. But I never did let it blemish or stop me from moving forward and learning about in the English life. And then I was I spoke only the language when I started school. I did not learn English until I was 11 years old to be understood and understand others what they are talking about. But I did well in school when I once learned English because I was a good listener. As children, we were taught to listen, sit still, never to interrupt. And we had to go potty before we went in the classroom and sat down, just like we did when we went to the longhouse. You go potty, you're not running in and out and going potty. Mm-hmm. And so we knew how to sit still in the classroom. Today, our children are so sad that they don't know how to do that. We have to teach them to learn how to sit still while we teach them. That's my experience with teaching my language. And I have experienced that with our children. Just mushulut, no ears, no sense of why I need to be still. But once they learn about who they are, and even when our languages are going to be allowed to be taught as our people that's learning the language are going to college, and then we're going to want those teachers to start other public schools to start accepting in 509J in Oregon, and I imagine all the other tribes will want the same thing. Right now, I am not really allowed to teach freely in a public school because I do not have a college education. The only education I have is my language, and I know everything about it and how it had controlled my people's lives, how they lived by it, and how we lived by and learned by natural nature. All our ways and skills and all that my people had. Now we have to go to school to learn it. They lived it every day to become, learn to be a corporation. And just like you heard about helping one another. And when we were taught by the U.S. government, our people are to learn how to farm and be livestockmen. They learned, nobody came in and teach them. They had to give them a few heads of cattle and tell them to raise it, and didn't tell them that they were going to have money to buy certain things to run it. But they did it. And when they sold their cattle, they didn't know anything about bank. So they knew they had to make that money go. They just can't spend it. And so it went to the ground in a coffee can. A lot of that money is out there somewhere. A lot of people looked for it. Even white people came in there with Geiger counters, didn't find that bank in the ground. But, you know, our people were skilled on their own. They already had skills of how to care for things. But this was new to them, farming and livestock. But they learned how to do it well. Even the wives would take care of their cattle when we became a government. We had to have tribal councilmen. Maybe like my dad was on tribal council. My mom had to go out of those cattle down about 60, maybe 100 cattle down to a lake about a mile by herself. And those cattle got educated by the men folks to go to the chush. On the chutasha. And those cattle would all march down and they knew where they were going. And they came back the same place because they were going to get fed. And the cows were getting educated by to each other, and the animals taught the people how to live and how to find their love and how to run a home. They learned from the eagle to live together forever. And so that's the kind of teaching I come from. So I'm married to one man, and we're still together for 61 years this August. And that's because of my teaching of our people. And I wasn't allowed to divorce. I trying to run home, and my mother would call my husband and tell him, you come get your wife. So that was our teaching. She said, you can't run away, Arlita. You made that choice. You love that man. You're going to the rest of his life. But anyway, our children are having a lot of, the children that we're teaching language to, they are really taking a thought of who they are and how they should be living and how you need to be still in a classroom, because as Indians, that's the way we were. Now we want to be like that again, learning our language. So it's making sense to them. And some of our students are non-tribal member Indians, but they don't have their language, so they come in to learn our language, so they will know a language. And they're Indians, and they want to be Indians with speaking a language. And so that's really very interesting to know. That's how much these children don't speak out, you know, but these children that's not from our tribe are speaking out. I'm away from my tribe. We don't have things like this at our tribe. So my mom is married here. So I'm going to come in. Is it okay if I come learn your language? And I says, yeah, it's fine. And you'll learn to communicate with these kids that's learning the language. And so we need every little help from you, and you need to educate yourself about who we are, our teachers, our administrative people from our schools also need to be educated before they enter into a public school to run the best education that they can for the students that will be in that school. And we are hiring a new superintendent with our 509J right now, and we got to be a part of it to let them know what we would think that superintendent would need to have. And so they got a lot of help. And so we're hoping that somebody's going to come in that's going to be knowledgeable. Our treaty of 1855 is a very real law for us to live in peace and in order in the way that we were put into that little piece of land to live and survive there. Now we're overgrowing it, but yet we can't ask for any more land. We got our ceded land to the government that we use where we gathered our foods and all our natural things that we lived, our ancestors lived in. And so we still use those lands to gather our foods and our medicinal shrubs and whatnot, and all our streams. The John Day River has Indian names to all the places that our people, that's who I am, I'm part of the John Day River, the Tuxpash people. And then in Wayam, in the Celilo Falls, before Celilo Falls, the total area existed when the water got bigger, there was little residents in that area, and part of our people come from there. And it was the little river in that falls was called Walla Walla. And so they thought we were Walla Walla, it's the ones that's clear over to Umatilla Way. No, it was that little stream there. And so, but the white people thought that was we were part of that Walla Walla, but it was a part of a little river that was flowing off of the falls, the big river, and coming down through the area there. So there's a lot of information that is going to go into this book. Yep. And there's a lot of Indian names from the Warm Springs tribes along the Columbia River, John Day River, Deschutes River, all the streams, and all the areas clear up to the Ochico Mountains has names. And so there is going to a lot, and I hope nobody gets lazy and say, oh, no, we don't have enough money to put all of that in. You're going to put everything in there so they will really know who Oregon once belonged to, the land, and before Oregon came, okay? And we are all nine different governments. We're not a whole government by ourselves. We all have different ways of life, just like Germans and Russians and what have you, you know.
Yep. I used to always say, mm-hmm. when you know one tribe, you know one tribe. There are other people who thought when you know one tribe,
okay,
you knew
so
all the tribes.
Okay, so that's what I kind of wanted you to know, and a little history and all. You know. And I'm very thankful that I got to be here and got to see you because I didn't meet you. Another guy, he's going to sleep up there. I don't know.
No, he's not. He's always up there. He likes to think that He likes you to think that kind of stuff so that he gets what.
That's the way our tribal councilman.
That's right.
That's the way he used to think. That's right. Tribal councilman, when they'd have a big issue, they'd all be sitting there like that. And, and so they'd be asking my dad, how come you guys sit there like that? How do you guys get anything done? But they're in deep thought. Okay,
that's
thank
right.
you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank you for this opportunity to be here today to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 13. My name is Urbana Little Eagle, and I come from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Originally, our people are Salilo Wayam and Taik, the two bands that my grandparents come from, and that is definitely a knowledge that I hope can be imparted upon, you know, not just my children, my grandchildren, but that knowledge, like my elder here is talking about, that places had names before, you know, they were called the things that they are called today. I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher for 13 years. This is my 13th year of teaching. And as a teacher, I'm held to a lot of responsibilities to maintain my teaching license. And as a language arts teacher, as a social studies teacher, I have to follow all of the, you know, the laws that guide me in that teaching practice. I have to teach specific language arts components. I have to teach specific social studies components to be able to maintain my teaching position within my classroom. And when I look at education, there isn't anything that says you have to teach anything about our people. There's nothing that says you have to maintain the knowledge and the history of the first people of this land. And that's something that we want to hold Oregon accountable to, that they have to teach the history and the knowledge of our people of this land, not only for our kids, not only so my children can know, but that in that broader perspective, that as citizens of Oregon, you're gaining a better understanding, you're gaining a better knowledge of what it means to have that government-to-government relationship with people that are sovereign. We're a sovereign nation here. We signed a treaty. My elders have told me about that treaty. And within that treaty, they made that agreement that education was going to be a component of that treaty. Now, when they made that agreement, they didn't make that agreement thinking that they were giving up their own educational values. They had a strong understanding of what it meant to educate their children mm-hmm. through that language, through the culture, through the songs, through the understanding of the land, through that relationship of the land. And so what we're asking for in this bill is that understanding that we don't want to give up that knowledge. We want to sustain that knowledge. And it needs to be just as important as this language arts, as this social studies, as this math. It doesn't need to be held less valuable. It is just as valuable. And I've heard this elder here say, we gave up a lot in that treaty. A lot of land in that treaty. And if you're not going to uphold your promise to education, we'll gladly take that back, you know? And so, and I heard her say that. And I was like, yeah, you know, that it's a promise. A treaty is that promise, you know, that you're going to uphold. And so in upholding, you know, we want to hold you accountable that that all children are going to have access to this knowledge about who we are as an indigenous people to this land, and that it's given, you know, that same level of accountability that I have to have as a teacher to teach language arts and to teach social studies. This needs to be given that same level of accountability. So I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you both. And it's nice to know that we have someone that is as fluent as you are in your own language, because as we all know about languages, mm-hmm. there's a lot of words that can't be expressed in another language.
Yeah.
And so you've got to help us understand. Mm-hmm. And we have lost most of the native speakers as you were saying, as they were saying earlier. So you're going to be an important part of how we move forward. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. Any questions? No. Sure. So for the leaders, tribal leaders, that was all of the ones that we have highlighted. Is there anybody else out there that is a tribal leader that would like to speak before I start going down the list of all of the others? I don't see anybody jumping up. Okay, so we're going to go down, and we try to do it by the distance from where you are to here, and it looks like a lot of those people already got to speak, but Colin Fogarty and Erica, is it Rash?
Rich.
Okay, says Confluence is where you're from, and let's see, we've got room for one more. Robin Butterfield.
Mr. Chair, if I could, just no disrespect, but I do have another committee this meeting later, so I'm gonna have to leave in a little bit. But no disrespect, ma'am, I just have.
You just want to leave before I say something about your roommate in college, who's my brother.
and we appreciate that. He'll go, and you can tell us more.
I can tell stories about him too.
He's already told stories about you.
This is going to be fun.
Oh, you want me to start? Okay. Well, I am Robin Butterfield. I am the Ho-Chunk Anishinaabe, or you might recognize Chippewa and Winnebago, both tribes that are not indigenous to Oregon, although my granddad was the first American Indian to graduate from Yale in 1910. He was a commissioner, one of the first, I think, superintendents out at Umatilla back in the day, and contributed greatly to the Oregon community, as well as have my aunts, uncles, and other relatives. But I thought I'd start off with a little different perspective on the law. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 13. I have about 46 years in Indian education, starting at the classroom level. I've been a district employee. I was the director of Indian Ed for the Oregon Department of Ed for about a decade. I have worked in the Bureau of Indian Affairs all over the country and finished my education career recently. Well, I'm retired, but I'm not finished, with the National Education Association, and just completed my appointment as an Obama appointee serving on the National Advisory Council for Indian Education and past president of the National Indian Education. And out of all of those experiences, I think the thing that has impacted me most is observing in literally hundreds of classrooms where Native children were receiving education, whether it was in the bureau system or, you know, the public schools. And I think one of the things that always stuck with me is a quote by Maya Angelou that says, "History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again." And so the two stories that I wanted to share out of all of those are based on a statistic that I heard some time ago that said 80% of a student's self-esteem comes from its peer group. And when my daughter was in the fifth grade up in Tigard, she came home with an assignment one week that was she was supposed to write a diary account of what it felt like to be a settler having just been attacked by the Indians. And the lead into that assignment was a two-paragraph narrative that basically had a positive message, how the Indians had helped the settlers survive the first winter, kind of the pilgrim story. And then the second one had such powerful, horrific language. It went something like, suddenly an attack was launched across your colony. Men, women, and children were killed at their dinner tables, and this is a direct quote, by their quote-unquote friends. And so my daughter, as a fifth grader, was supposed to come home and write a diary of what it felt like to have been that oppressed group. And the oppressors in that narrative were American Indians. But because of all of my work in education, I know that those roles can shift. And most often, non-Native children, European white American children, are usually in the oppressor group when it comes to cross-cultural conflict. And so if we don't teach that lesson well to our children, then all we try to do is shift perspectives. One will be the oppressor, the other will be the victim. And I think having a statewide curriculum like this sends a message that there's another option, and that is, how do we create community with a thorough understanding of the past? How do we become co-responsible for our common environment, our common resources, our common problems and challenges? And so I think it's really important to think about how we implement this kind of a curriculum. And also to recognize that I represent, I think the latest census I heard was over 75% of Native people who live off their reservations in urban centers, thanks to things like the Indian Reorganization Act and the Indian Removal Period and Termination and those things, where Native people were basically given one-way tickets out of town to relocate. So we have lots of Indian stories that can be told in this curriculum that I think have the power of bringing people together in terms of understanding. And so that's one story. But part of that story was what Ramona did was struggle over how she was going to respond to the assignment. And part of what I tried to help her with, I said, well, let me talk to your teacher and find out how she introduced that lesson. And, of course, when I called her, she was just embarrassed. She was appalled. She said, oh, my gosh, I didn't think about Ramona being an Indian. And she said, I need to do a better job at doing a multiple perspectives on that lesson. And I thought, great, you know. And she said, I think I'll have the kids write from the Indian perspective as well. And so I thought, well, that's going to require her to give some background to this. So I said, okay, waited a few days. Ramona came home, and I said, how'd it go? And she said, well, it was okay. And I knew from her response that something missed the mark. And I said, so did your teacher talk more about why there was conflict? And she said, well, kind of. And she said, well, they were fighting over the land. And I said, okay. And I said, so did the students write from the other perspective as well? And she said, well, you could if you wanted to. And I thought, she didn't get it. She made one a mandatory perspective that was valuable enough for the kids to identify, and the other was marginalized because it was optional. And I think that's what we've done a lot when we tell the Oregon Trail, the, you know, westward movement kind of a perspective. So I think this curriculum has the opportunity to do more than that. And I worked in Washington State on the curriculum and looked a lot at how we can effectively focus on standards for how this curriculum can make a difference. And so the second instance I just wanted to share was based on about a 10-year experience working with tribes across Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana that were developing 137 stories that were written by the tribal members and that were supposed to be used in language arts. And I came on board with that program when most of the stories were complete and we were developing implementation strategies. And so we were doing things like trying to assess how effective these stories were. And like one was just holding a library with lots of engaging books like Dr. Seuss and the Indian Reading Series and seeing which ones were checked out the most. But one of the ones that I thought was really telling was we used to do a student participation check where somebody would come in and during regular language arts time we would check every 15 minutes whether students were on task or engaged in the learning process, and we would tally how many students were engaged. And then we would come in during the Indian Reading Series time, and we would also tally that. And by far, the engagement was improved when those cultural materials were used in the classroom. The kids were curious. They were interested. It didn't matter if it was a Warm Springs tribe or if it was one in Montana or if it was one in Washington State. They just wanted to know about, you know, the culture of these other groups. And so this type of curriculum is good for all kids. It can be engaging, it can be fun, it can be interesting, it can be used in math class, it could be used in science class. And so I think that that is one of the most compelling reasons why this curriculum is valuable. And I think Oregon could benefit immensely, you know, from that. So miigwech and pinigigi.
Thank you. And I will say I appreciate it. And we're going, just so people know, other people have other committees that go on later, and so they have to leave. And we, this is all recorded. It will become part of the permanent record for this bill, and we look back at it more than a few times. So I appreciate all of you who are staying, and we want to get through as much as we will. And I'll be here as long as we have to. I don't know where Senator Lithicum is, but I scheduled to make sure, regardless of how long it went, I would be here to take
Mr. Chair, if I could give your brother my best. he was a good friend, and also tell him that all of those stories, the statute of limitations ran out years ago.
I'll tell him that. Thank you.
Oh, and I need to announce that the Marijuana Committee is going to be in A.
A. Right,
in A.
Okay. Right, right. That's my other fun thing I get to do. No connection between
no,
then and now.
No, we failed back then, no.
So, sorry about that interruption. And
okay. Just make sure it's not a joint committee.
Joint committee. He's going to the joint committee. Yeah.
It is
a joint committee, yes.
Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to express our support for Senate Bill 13. As you may know, I covered the Oregon Legislature for 10 years as a reporter and 7 years as an editor, and this is my first time ever testifying in favor of a bill. So thank you very much for this opportunity. And I come, my name is Colin Fogarty, and I'm executive director of Confluence, a small nonprofit devoted to the mission of connecting people to place through art and education. And we're primarily known for 6 art landscape installations along the Columbia River in collaboration with Northwest tribes, local communities, and the celebrated artist Maya Lin. These landscape projects stretch from Chinook homelands at the mouth of the Columbia River all the way to the Snake River and Nez Perce homelands. One of the other ways that we accomplish our mission is through a program called Confluence in the Classroom, and it's a very simple idea to bring indigenous educators and artists into classrooms to do meaningful projects about the Columbia River system. These are not just art projects. These are powerful experiences and hands-on experiences for kids to connect to a more inclusive history and to the cultures of the Columbia River system beyond the story of Lewis and Clark explored this place and the pioneers settled it. It's very important to us to be a conduit. That is our role here, to be a conduit for indigenous educators, indigenous voices to get into the classroom for students to meet them. And that is our role here. So we urge a do pass recommendation on Senate Bill 13 because the curriculum that will result will connect students to a more inclusive history of that state, of our state, and that matters a great deal. This program has the support of the philanthropic community, including the Wild Horse Foundation, the PGE Foundation, the Roundhouse Foundation, and the Oregon Cultural Trust. But the bottom line is we believe there's a real demand right now for this kind of education, and we hope that as a small nonprofit, we can support schools and tribes and the state implement this policy. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chairman Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Erica Wrench. I'm the education coordinator for Confluence. And as Colin said, we connect Native educators with K-12 classrooms to do meaningful and culturally relevant projects about the Columbia River system from the Native American perspective. Our program has 3 outcomes, which are intrinsic to the indigenous perspective. Those are ecological lifeways, culture, and sovereignty. Confluence in the Classroom brings the support. Teachers bring the curriculum, which we hope will be this curriculum. And our Native educators bring their unique experience through direct experience with students. And that is essential and vital to us because we recognize this is not our story to tell. I'd like to share some words from teachers, students, and Native educators in our program to demonstrate the impact a direct experience has on learning. An art teacher writes, "Standing on the ridge overlooking the Columbia, watching it flow, and hearing stories of the fish, beaver, and coyote makes it easier to understand the importance of the river for food, transportation, and the huge part it plays in the lives of Native Americans." An after school coordinator writes, "Towards the end of Confluence, South Wasco School had their yearly powwow. The Confluence students were the very first kids dancing and leading the others in the different types of dance. They absolutely celebrated and embraced the cultural differences within our community and were eager to share it with others. A fourth grader writes, as soon as Mr. Foster blew into his flute, the entire class fell silent. He mesmerized us. He sang a tribal song, beat his drum, and truly expressed himself. If everyone on earth could hear that, I feel the world would be a much better place. And one of our Native educators says that programs like Confluence help break down barriers and statistics and give Native students ownership and pride in school to know their way of life is being taught and respected. So, Chairman and members of the committee, we fully support Senate Bill 13. Thank you for letting me speak today, and thank you for demonstrating your commitment to educating all Oregonians about the Native American experience by passing this bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I will tell you, I have a niece whose mother, my sister-in-law, is Sklallam up in Washington, and she's graduating from law school in Yale this year. So it's been a fun thing to watch the opportunity for her, and you don't want to argue with her about Native American issues.
No, and my cousin's daughter is at Yale now, majoring in chemistry.
That would be interesting.
So,
I wonder if they ever. It's not that big a school.
We'll
have to check on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good.
So next we have Michael. Is that right? Yeah. Vandellis from OSPI Washington. Okay. And we have Rainley Rotelto. Thank you. And we have, let's go to one of these that's from a long ways away, Lynn Anderson from Florence. Come on up. And whoever wants to start. I guess it's you.
Chairman Roblin and the committee, education committee, just thanking you for the time today to offer some words in support of Senate Bill 13. Gwalapo ti diishits, chotl arakwe diichu, which is to say in our Lushootseed language, welcome friends and relatives, each and every one of you. And today I'm offering support for Senate Bill.
And be sure to give your name if you
have. Oh, excuse me, Michael Vendiola.
Thank you.
And I'm a Swinomish Indian Tribal Community member from Washington State. I also serve the state of Washington as the program supervisor for the Office of Native Education that implements the since time immemorial tribal sovereignty curriculum in Washington State, which is the state mandated curriculum for all public schools in the state of Washington. So today I was invited down to meet with the advisory board and also join you all in testimony. So today I wanted just to offer some things to think about in terms of considering this bill. And in the country, United States, there was a research project that was done on all 50 states on what public schools K through 12 offer in regards to teaching about Native Americans. And in that research project, they found that only, first of all, 23 states don't mention anything at all about Native Americans. So that's about half the states don't teach about tribal folks. Of the states that do, 87% teach from a pre-1900 context. And so that's what we're facing in terms of teaching about tribal folks. And so today, I'm very pleased to be here because I think you have a tremendous opportunity to, one way to put it is a swinging of the pendulum, or as Coast Salish people or water people that understand the tides, and this is a changing of the tides in Washington and Montana and now in Oregon, Wyoming. We're seeing these bills that are coming forward that are really looking at what I began with, which is thinking about the relationships between the state and the tribes. And so it's very honorable to see the folks, the tribal leaders who've come forward and who are also trumpeting that same idea about relationships, improving relationships, and looking at education for all students within the state of Oregon and improving their understanding and the contributions of tribal community members. And so I want to just offer my support and standing with the Office of Indian Education of Oregon and provide any kind of support and answer any questions regarding what we've done in the state of Washington in implementing our own similar law. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and the committee, my name is Lynn Anderson, and I am Anishinaabe and French and Irish. And I am the director of an Indian education program, Title VI, in Western Lane County. I had a very large after-school program that up till last year was 150 students in an afternoon that were attending. And I was real proud of that. That was quite a thing to build for students within the community. One of the things that I did was, irregardless of the child that walked through my door, they were welcome, because it's all built on relationships. And when our students start to understand each other, the healthier the relationships are in the playground, in the cafeteria, and then it moves into the community. I have three points that I'd like to make. One that I want to do for clarity is that this land was already settled. The Oregon Trail and the Westward Movement didn't bring settlement. It just covertly has brought unsettled times now. So I just want to make sure that we're still recognizing that there's been change. When Robin talked about the reading series, it is something to this day that I still use in my program with my students. And her information is spot on. When I take one of those books into a classroom for reading time, I don't have any behavior problems. We move along, we get the business done. But if I take a Dr. Seuss in, or Where the Wild Things Are, and that's one of my favorites, it doesn't speak that way, because it doesn't represent all the children in the room. And I think that that's important. Kids want to learn. You know, kids aren't born thinking of people in different ways. They're kids. Just flat out, let's have fun and let's play games and let's get on with business. And the last part is something that touched me deeply, and it happened last week doing a classroom presentation. And the teacher I've worked with, I've been doing this 25 years, teaching Indian education. And she came up to me, she's ready for retirement, and she said, I want you to know that what I've learned from you when you come in is that my classroom community becomes more stable every time we do one of these presentations. They get healthier because they're learning more about each other. Because one of my questions always is, who in this classroom is an American Indian? Because sometimes they look like me. And it's really easy to think they're just another white kid sitting in front of them. And so it's always that moment where students can look to each other and go, wow, cool. And those conversations start, and that's where healthy starts. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, senators, thank you for letting me come today and testify. My name is Rainley Ritalto, and for the record, I'm non-native. So I'm a grandmother of seven, and my interest in Senate Bill 13 comes from personal experience of one of my grandchildren's classrooms. So my oldest grandson is now a freshman at Benson High School, but in the prior years, he was a student at Harrison Park Elementary, which is a very diverse, ethnically diverse school. And so they were studying, you know, Lewis and Clark, the Oregon Trail. And at the culmination of that series of education, they had a potlatch feast. So I got invited to that as a grandmother. I'm always interested to go to classrooms. And so I went there, and in circulating and talking through the classroom of students to hear, you know, what did they learn, you know, about this whole series of education, the thing that universally was true that I heard from every student, and it's really disturbing if you think about it, it actually shocked me, frankly, was that every one of these students thought that Native American people were people that just existed back in Lewis and Clark's time that don't exist now. You know, so I think, if nothing else,
that should speak very strongly to the need for Senate Bill 13 to pass. It's absolutely shameful, and frankly, we are perpetuating cultural and educational disconnect if we don't correct this. So I urge you strongly as a grandmother, a non-native grandmother, to support Senate Bill 13. We need this education. We need to understand who we are, who was here first, you know, our history of the past, our present history, and our future history is at risk if we don't correct this. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I do want to say, I think one of the things you mentioned that's important in all of this conversation, the thing that's, for me, has always been enticing, and I was an educator my whole mm-hmm. career, is that, you know, you live in rural areas, and we always talk about, you know, we can't get economies here, we can't get this, we can't get that. But, you know, there's only one group that place is really even more important than the other people that are there, and that's the ones that have been there for time immemorial.
Right.
And they're always going to be there. They're always going to be a part of how you build community in those places. And if you don't start to recognize that, it makes it hard for those communities to continue to grow and to be the healthy places they should be. So thanks for coming with your perspective, and you look too young to be
well,
a grandmother.
One other thing
people.
I just want to say, too, from a statistic point of view, I'm a retired banker from U.S. Bank, so I worked there for 23 years. I've seen all these demographic studies. Year upon year, every single year that I would see it, when you see the population increase, all the populations increase except the Native.
American, yep.
Population range is 3-5% is a high. There's something profoundly wrong. This education can help fix a lot of different things.
Thank
so
you very much.
It's very profoundly needed.
Thank you. So we now have Lalani Sivazaslin. How do I say that, Lalani? There you are, Lalani. Okay. And Shandine Garcia. I got the last one. It was easier on that one, Shandine. Thank you. And Don Mallett. We're getting through here. This is pretty amazing. Only a couple more groups. So thank you. And thanks very much again for being here and wading through this. So I appreciate it. Whoever wants to start.
Let me start. Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee, for the record, my name is Leilani Sebzalian, and I am here as a member of the American Indian Alaska Native State Advisory Board. Panel today in favor of Senate Bill 13. So I hope today that my words do justice to the long history of Native advocacy that has supported this effort. A century ago, Seneca scholar Arthur Parker said, "No group has been more unjustly represented by historians and curriculum than American Indians and Alaska Natives." And a quarter century ago, the late Creek educator and advocate Floyd Pepper argued that school curriculum denies Native students the chance to be real-time beings in school. Today, I add my voice to this long history of advocacy for Indigenous education on Indigenous terms. And I thought about how to best convince you of the importance of this bill. I could speak to you today as an educational researcher, someone who has studied the negative impact of inaccurate and stereotypical curriculum on Native children. I could tell you that accurate curriculum on tribal history, sovereignty, and Native nations benefits all children, all students, and that, in fact, it's crucial if we want to ensure that students' democratic civic identities in Oregon aren't rooted in the denial and degradation of Native people and sovereignty, but are instead educate our citizens and future leaders who respect and recognize Native nationhood, sovereignty, and treaty rights. I could speak to you, too, as a teacher educator and tell you from my work with pre-service and in-service teachers that there is a dire need for accurate and respectful curriculum and teacher training to support its implementation. In its absence, many teachers rely on inaccurate, stereotypical, and outdated curriculum, even replicating what they were taught as kids, miseducating not just Native students, but all students. But I opt today instead to speak to you as a mother of two Native boys, two Aleutic students who attend public schools in Oregon. Our name in our own language is Sugpiak, which means the real people. But it's hard for my children to feel like real people when what circulates in the curriculum are degrading caricatures. It's hard to feel like real people when Native life is reduced to loincloths and teepees. It's hard to feel like real people when your dynamic and complex history is ignored and you are just a footnote to the narrative of Western progress, and you disappear after the year 1900. It's hard to feel like real people when your culture is reduced to demeaning, even sacrilegious arts and crafts. It's hard to raise my sons as real human beings in a climate of dehumanization. And so I urge you to support this bill so that my sons and all Native students in Oregon's public schools and tribal schools are granted the dignity that they deserve and can see themselves and be seen as real people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the Senate committee, for the record, my name is Dawn Malliott, Cree, and I'm here to support Senate Bill number 13. I'm with Springfield Indian Education now for the past 3 years, and prior to that, I was out on the coast in Coos Bay Indian Education for 7 years and the tribal liaison also out there. What I was going to say, which hits me all the time mostly, is that my students and families feel completely invisible, and that's a big tragedy. But when I was thinking about that, the bigger tragedy is that when I go into the classrooms and to the schools to talk with the teachers, that I can say probably 90% don't know. These are the teachers that do not know that there's 9 tribes in Oregon.
That's true.
They don't know that. And so this bill will help push forward that we get the accurate information to the teachers so that we can support the teachers to support the kids so that they feel less invisible and they have that connectedness to their community and to the schools, which will enable them to, you know, hopefully graduate and all those kinds of things. So that's really what I came here to talk about. Thank you.
And part of the whole history needs to be, we do have 9 federally recognized tribes. They are sovereign nations in our state. But they are each made up of tribes.
Exactly.
That are more than that. And, you know, each of the tribes that make those up have their own histories, too. And they are distinct, actually, in
exactly.
place and manner and the things they did. And it would be good as time goes on to develop that, because each of those tribes do that internally.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you can ask a person who's part of Siletz, what tribe are you? And they say Siletz. And then they'll say, but, you know.
Right.
And I think we I don't want to diminish the 9 tribes because that is the group. Those are the government units.
Right.
But there's more to talk about.
Well, and I ask that when I go in, do they know who the original people of the land are?
Right.
And none of them know that they were a Kalapuyan.
Or Nillet.
Yeah. I mean, they don't know that. And then that gets into the whole thing of the removal acts and our own trails of tears and all of those other things that we had here
right.
in Oregon. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Ed Committee. My name is, for the record, my name is Shandine Garcia. I am Laguna Pueblo and Chicana. I am here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 13. When I was in college at Yale, a junior, 10 freshmen students, women, dressed up with shoe polish, brown shoe polish, they put on their arms and they put on their face and they put fake feathers on their head and they got brown paper bags and they cut them up to look like buckskin and they danced and whooped on my lawn. The year before, there were only 4 of them. It was part of an initiation. They were initiating the 10 lacrosse freshmen into the lacrosse team. The year before, there were 4 of them, and the theme was the 4 seasons. My junior year, there were 10 of them. Can you guess what the theme was?
10 little Indians.
The 10 little Indians.
Yeah.
I speak today in support of this bill because when we choose to prioritize historically accurate curriculum, we choose to have informed students exiting our system. When we choose to prioritize Oregon tribal history, we choose to participate in righting the wrongs of forced migration, termination, and assimilation. When we choose to support American Indian Alaska Native students, we choose to inform both Native and non-Native students because we can introduce them to each other as neighbors. Supporting this bill is an active choice. Not supporting it is a choice too. When we make this decision to support Senate Bill 13,
It's an active choice to support students learning our own history. It's an active choice to support teachers who are begging for the support. It's an active choice to have all of us be accurately informed, and it just strengthens us as a state. But make no mistake, what we're doing is a choice. We're asking you to invest in Senate Bill 13. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? I don't think so. But anyway, thank you. And again, thank you very much. So next we have, I gotta get my eyes. Laura John. Is it Dina Smith, Warm Springs? Or Thella Pat from Warm Springs? And then there's only one more. We'll have to sit up there by themselves unless we get a fourth chair. Oh, good. We're going to bring a fourth chair. And that's Merle Kirk. Then we can have all four of you up. That works it easier. And then we'll bring Salon back and and our other educators. No. To talk a little. And again, thank you for being here and wading through. And you're right there is fine. The microphone works everywhere.
Sure.
Order makes a difference, I guess. No, that's okay. No. Oh, that's right. That's good.
Under a task.
That's always nice, too. It's weird how we get back together different times. So whoever wants to start? Oh, there was every singer went to you.
Good evening, Chairman Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Laura John, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm a parent of a student attending Cleveland High School. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 13 and share a perspective of a parent whose children attended schools with a similar mandate to the one being proposed today. My two children attended Portland schools in their early grades. They did not learn about Native Americans in the classroom, except during the days right before the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah.
Most of their teachers and classmates were not aware that they were Native, not even with my son's long braids. In 2006, I made the decision to go back to school and was accepted into a graduate program at University of Montana that brought us to Missoula. After enrolling my children in school, in their new school, I learned about the state mandate Indian Education for All. It was the first of its kind in the country to be implemented using state funds, and I learned much later that that particular mandate wasn't funded early on, and that the real implementation happened after the state supported it with funding. For the first time, my children received lessons about American Indian tribes and history in their classroom. They received this through elementary, middle school, and high school. Every year they received it, and it was lessons that they received throughout the school year, not just during a particular holiday time. My children had the privilege of being in a school environment that was inclusive of American Indians and that taught about the tribes and the state. They had the experience of being with classmates who understood who my children were, where they came from, and that respected their cultural background. I grew up in Portland. In the late 70s, I attended an all-Indian urban preschool that was near what is now the convention center. This was my first school experience. So I grew up, or I entered school with Native classmates, Native teachers, and we learned about Native culture and the tribes. We learned songs, we learned language. It was a very influential time in my life. Once into elementary school, my education experience was very different. I remember experiences similar to the ones that you heard parents sharing with you today. Much later, I attended Madison High School. During my freshman and sophomore years, I had the opportunity to get involved with the Title VI, which was back then, I think, Title IX, Youth Leadership Group. This experience was enriching and opened my eyes to the importance of learning about tribal history and culture and having a presence. I was able to work with other students from around Portland to put together conferences and leadership opportunities. We did visits to schools. We brought in speakers. That encouraged me to choose topics to present in class projects that were about American Indians. And I was discouraged when I did that in high school. I didn't feel that my classmates or even my teachers understood. They didn't have a background to understand what I was presenting when I presented on the boarding school era, for example. During my junior year, I made the decision to drop out of high school. I didn't feel connected. I felt invisible. I felt overlooked and couldn't find a cultural anchor to keep me in school. I had, fortunately, was able to get a GED and then enrolled in a tribal college in Kansas. There I was able to take courses in American Indian Studies, eventually earning a degree in that topic. I learned about tribal sovereignty, history, culture, tribal law, even tribal science. And it really moved me. A year ago, I moved back to Portland from Montana. My daughter is now in a school system that does not include curriculum that adequately teaches about tribal nations. The transition for my daughter has been challenging. For the first time in her life that she remembers, she is experiencing that sense of isolation and invisibility that I experienced as a high school student in Portland. For the first time, she is experiencing what it is like to have peers ask rudimentary questions when they learn that she is Native, such as, do you live in a teepee? And for the first time, she is reluctant to let her classmates and teachers know that she is Native American and an enrolled member of the Nez Perce tribe. You've heard many people speak today about the value of this bill. The impact will be far and wide if it's implemented. The impact of Indian education for all in Montana is much bigger than just a mandated curriculum in the classroom. It's seen in the relationships between Main Street and tribal communities. It's seen in understandings between tribal, state, and local agencies. It's even seen in the state legislature, where there are 8 American Indian state legislators, not just one. Thank you for allowing me to share my testimony today, and I urge you, or urge a due pass on Senate Bill 13. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Artelia Pat. That's my English given name. My Indian name is Khashayat. I'm named after my great-grandmother, and I carry that name proudly. I grew up on the Warm Springs Indian Reservation, and I went to the boarding school from the age of 5 to 14. At the boarding school, we weren't allowed to speak our language. We had to, you know, do it with all the ones that understood each other, because there's 3 different tribes on our reservation. So we sought out the ones that could speak our language, and we would speak without the matrons hearing us or out of hearing from, otherwise we would get in trouble. But anyway, I'm here to support the bill because it can't come at a more timely period. Most of our elders that are fluent speakers are passing on. And fortunately, I grew up in a home with my parents, and they spoke English and our language. But when we were around our grandparents, they just spoke our language, so we knew and understood the language real well. But I want to say that our people have always been resilient. We always were able to, you know, survive in the 2 cultures. And you have to hand it to our elders for teaching us our own religion, our own language. And today, when we practice those are echoes from the past. Everything is carried forward. And it's up to our generation now to continue carrying that forward to our own children and to our own grandchildren. So I really want to thank for this bill to come through, because it just, it's going to help us do that, because we survive on our own. The school doesn't recognize what we do. We have to go in at 7:30 to 9 to teach the kids crafts. And they're anxious to do that. And we've had up to like 42 students in our class. And then the same with the Indian language. The teacher comes in at 7:30 to 9. So we have to do it before the school starts. But we're willing to do that. We're willing to make that sacrifice. So I just want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Deanie Smith. I'm from Warm Springs, Oregon. I serve on their education committee, and I also work at the Culture and Heritage Department. So I just wanted to come up and express my support for Senate Bill 13. Orthelia was talking about a Rise and Shine program that our program had started about a year ago. So we've been battling with our school district about getting culture and curriculum and language into the school during school time, because that's the best time for us to reach our students. And so rather than having time during the school day, we have to do out of school hours. So that means programs in the morning, programs after school. You know, we're in a rural area. We have a lot of students that live outside the agency where our school is, so it's hard for kids to come in unless your parent works. They're not going to have a way in to participate in these programs. Unless you have a way home, then they don't have a chance to participate in these programs. So the place in which I'm coming from and the place that I wanted to talk about was the need for curriculum like this to be in the schools to reach everybody. We're constantly trying to break down barriers for our students and for ourselves and for our children and for our people. And I'm coming from a place where this is who we are. You know, we come from, you know, in the academic area, you know, Warm Springs, we have about 1,000 students in our school district that are identified as Native students. So we have a very low graduation rate. We graduate maybe 23-25%. You know, when you talk about a graduation rate that's so low, and it's been like that for 40 years, something obviously is not working. We are coming from a place where we need change. We need this change. You know, this is so important for our people. This is so important for our students. If we're at performing the lowest in the state of Oregon for the 9 tribes, Oregon is performing the lowest in the nation, that puts us at the very bottom. So now you know where I'm coming from. So you know how we grow up, how we're perceived, all the stereotypes and everything. That's a lot for children to carry, you know, and it's a lot for us to live with. It's a lot for us to take on when media only, you know, portrays you in a negative way. Warm Springs, a place where children die. Oregonian article. A place where murder, suicide, you know, everything that the media puts out there, everything that we hear about on the news is always so negative. And we take that on and we carry that because we see it, we know it, it's in our community, it affects our people, and the people outside see us as that too. So when we don't have curriculum that shows us in a positive way, everybody knows a negative. Oh yeah, I know Warm Springs, that's where they had that murder. Oh, I know Warm Springs, that's where they had this high infant death. You know, I mean, it's so heavy on our hearts. You know, we come from a dark place, we really do. And you know, with curriculum like this, the way you make change, and you know, I think that it'll help us in our cultural identity. You know, true story, a teacher last year
in Warm Springs. Almost 100% Native American school on the reservation asks her class, how many of you are Native students? Three kids in her room out of 25 to 30 raise their hand. Where does that come from? How do they not know they're Native? Because they're not taught that. It comes from a place where your parents grew up in the boarding school. You grew up and you're raised from a place of shame, where you don't want to be who you are, you know. And it's internal conflict that we grow up with, and it's hard to break down those barriers, and it's hard to see light at the end of the tunnel, you know. So it's really frustrating that we are been continue to fight this battle. Let us teach. Let us be who we are. Let us do these kinds of things, because in reality, that's our reality. Our kids don't even know who they are. We're performing academically at the lowest in the entire nation. You know, it's frustrating and it's heartbreaking to want to fight that battle for change. But this is someplace, a small difference that we can make is through this curriculum. Getting it into the schools, changing other people's perspective of who we are, changing our perspective of who we are, knowing who we are and where we came from. You know, when you carry yourself in pride, you walk differently. You act differently. You have different hopes and dreams, you know, but when you're constantly in the bottom of the barrel, it's hard to get out, you know, but people get out. A lot of people will. But, you know, it's just a battle that's going to take a lot of our people a long time to figure out. But, you know, I believe that being Native American is a state of mind. You don't have to be an enrolled member of a federally recognized tribe to be Native American. It's a state of mind. It's what you teach. It's how you carry yourself, what you teach your children. So when you're reading in these books and your tribe's not even in there, wow, who are we? Where did we come from? I didn't know who I was and where I came from until I was in college. I went to Indian University. My job in one of my classes was to research my own tribe. You know, it wasn't until then that I started learning to be proud of who I was, where I came from. You know, and that's in young adulthood. And it shouldn't take that long for us to finally get there if you graduate from high school and if you decide to go to college, which is a smaller number than any of you probably could believe. So it isn't until then that we're teaching or we're learning. But that's a choice. That's an individual choice. So I think that, you know, like I said, this is part of a state of mind. If we can make this change here, you know, people on the outside will say, hey, I learned about Warm Springs. I want to go see Warm Springs. I want to go visit Warm Springs. I know they got a resort out there. You know, not only will it help cultural identity, but it also help, you know, tribal economics. Having people come to our tribe, having people come to a place that they want to know more about. But thank you for hearing me out. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
Nikolawit. My name is Merle Kirk, and my Indian name is Slithgum, and I'm here to support the Senate Bill 13. It also ties into the Bill 183 for me as being a teacher, and I also did some teachings with foster students, and I also worked with some adopted adults, and those, they are so searching, they're yearning, they're feeling lost, they need a and then in the meantime, where I was working with them at was at treatment places, and so they're searching for something, they feel lost, and once you get working with any kind of Native or language, they feel really good about themselves. They find a connection. And even when I worked with late Grandma Adeline Miller, we went to the high school and we went to the classroom, and the teacher, she's non-native, And she was in full support for Warm Springs going to the schools, to the high school. And she said that after they went there, anything we might have wrote on the board was respected, as in other times they weren't. And a sense of pride and self-esteem is building their character. And that also goes to helping with that trauma-informed, you know. And then it'll also help healing. It'll help open up many doors for these students and to get along and how to cope. And it also goes from historical trauma. Many of our elders weren't quite taught how to cope. And so, and it kind of goes down in a sad little cycle. But if we can get ways to help our students, and this would help all of the students. There's probably many that are part Indian or, you know, or some other tribe. Just that connection. And this, you know, we're from this land, and we all work together to help take care of this land. And with this bill will really help all the nations in Oregon. I really believe so. And if it'll also help other nations in Oregon to, you know, feel proud about themselves and have their work towards, you know, this type of teachings in the school too. So with that, I would just ask for your support and believe in healing, and that's our main thing. You know, everything's a good, this could be a good cycle. I think we can break the cycle. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Is there anyone else out there who didn't get a chance to speak that wants to now? I don't like to, you know, we've been here a long time. You sat a long time. And if you want to talk, I'm going to give you a chance to talk. Okay. Otherwise, okay, very good. Come on up.
Okay. My name is Greg Arquette. I'm a language teacher and a longhouse leader in Warm Springs.
Do you know all these people from Warm Springs? There's a lot of people here from Warm
Springs. Yeah, we brought a lot.
No, that's very nice.
I have a choice, but but I'm glad to be here today. And I just wanted to say that in the past, our people used to teach these things in the home, our culture and our language and our history of our families and of our peoples that lived along the Columbia River. And somewhere along the way, you know, through the historical traumas that you heard about, that stopped. The parents quit teaching the children quit learning, quit wanting to hear about it in this new world that we came into. And our people are still adapting to this new way of life that's still new to us, less than 100 years old. We've been trying to learn and live this way of life. And, you know, we see it in our children and even in our parents, the trauma that they went through, the way that they feel, the way that they don't want to talk about the past, you know, and tell us about it. And I always wonder, you know, how come all these fluent speakers, their children never learned? And it's everyone, you know. There's very few speakers on our reservation anymore, Yakima and Warm Springs. I'm from Yakima myself, but I grew up in Warm Springs, living there, and I consider that my home and my people. And I missed the time the elders were there. I was doing other things growing up and riding bikes and doing things that we do as children. And I pulled myself away from it. But now I learned and I see the importance of our way of life, you know, and then I go into the schools and work with the kids. And I ask that question too. How many of you know what tribe you are? And none of them knew what tribes they were. And a lot of them were all three, or they were from Umatilla or Yakima. And I said, how many of you have a tribal card? And they all raised their hands, and they said, what does it say on there? They're like, I don't know. And they didn't know, you know, which language their parents spoke or their grandparents spoke, you know, or where their grandparents lived. And they didn't know that we came from the Columbia River originally. And and so it made me really think, you know, about how I was as a kid, too. And I didn't know those things. But when I was growing up, my parents would take me to visit my relatives along the Columbia River and made us go to the longhouse. But we weren't taught the language. We weren't taught the dances or the songs until we were older. And until recently, you know, when I turned my life around, that's the path that was laid in front of me. And my gift of song, you know, I started learning our songs and our culture and our ceremonies, and it was like it was meant to be. And so that's what I do now, you know, and I, just like you heard, we only can do it before school. Because of that, it's not allowed in the schools and after school, and so that's the times that we have. But there are teachers, you know, in the school that seen me, how I teach, how I work with the kids, and how they respond to the dances and to the songs. And they asked me to come into their class and teach the songs, to teach music about how we sing, about how we drum, and about... you know, about the songs and about the dances. But I never did get a chance to do that or even ask if I had permission to do it. That music teacher just wanted me to come in there and do it. But I never did. And so, you know, this bill is really important for us. And like you heard, the man from Washington, you know, they have a law that has that. Montana has that law that's required that the people have to learn about the people there. And so it's really important, you know, and I think that we're way behind in these kind of things, in these kind of, for our people, you know, in Oregon. And it should be in there already, you know, and we should be able to go into the schools and teach, you know, but it's that curriculum that doesn't exist, you know, for all our tribes in Oregon to do it. And there's a lot of books out there that I've read, you know, that has accurate history of our people that were told by the people in the past, you know, and that's what helped me to understand, and I share it with people that I teach, from the little children to the adults, you know, and I share it in the way that they can understand, you know, in the evening classes, the morning classes, and after school classes that I was doing. And you can see it, you know, in their eyes, you know, in their smiles, in their dance. When they dance, you can see the pride that they carry when they're doing that. And the children that didn't learn in our class and with me growing up, they mixed them, the older children and the younger children. And the older children were, they didn't want to dance, they didn't want to sing. And the little kids did, but when the little kids seen the older kids not doing it, they didn't want to do it either. It was like it was a shame that was rubbed off to them. And so I told the bosses that they needed to separate them because it's ruining our class. These other kids don't want to dance. There was a few of them that did. And the little kids were just kind of following them to not want to do it anymore, you know, and it kind of disheartened me. You know, and some of the kids, but after the other kids weren't in there anymore, the kids danced happy again, you know, and they sang, and they were proud of what we were doing. And so that's just my experience, you know, and my testimony on how I teach and what I see in the schools and what the kids are learning and what they need to learn, you know, they need to learn who they are. You know, and where they come from, and you know, all that's really important to me and important to all of our people and important for our children, and it's important for our parents to know too. You know, there's a lot of parents out there that don't know how to teach their children about those things. And even grandparents, there's grandparents that don't know how to teach their children and their children those things either. And so this would really help, you know, to allow it in the schools, and hopefully the parents will catch on too and start learning about themselves also. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tots Kalau, Macus Katialio, Senate Committee, and the elders in the room. For the record, my name is Sierra Green. I'm Nez Perce. Yeah, I could probably talk your guys' ear off all evening, and I know we've been sitting here all day.
Well, thank you for being here in particular, because I have always been frustrated that the Nez Perce have their reservation in Idaho, but I just, it's nice to have you, because we know that they spent a lot of time. There weren't borders in those days.
Yeah.
So thank you.
And that is one of my points later on. Well, I'll just start at the top of my list here. One, SB 13 truly supports place-based education, which has been proven time and time again to engage students at all levels, pre-kindergarten through secondary education, higher education. So I just wanted to highlight that component of what SB 13 can offer to our education system. Another thing that's, and a lot of this has been already expressed, but I just want to reiterate it. This is a step towards reconciliation. And as my elder here just explained, that, you know, not just for the future generations or for those who are in office right now, but for the parents who have lost the ways of parenting through the colonization of our people. So reconciliation is a huge part of what SB 13 can offer to our communities and our society as a whole. Next, promoting student cultural identity, and not just the Native students, but a lot of times introducing another culture into a classroom will get the curiosity of students. What is my own culture? And even if it is from European descent, everybody has a culture. And if it's American, this is part of their story as it is not written in many books, but should be. All of these facets of what SB 13 can offer promote student success across the board. And you can go to several educational journals that are peer-reviewed, and it will state exactly what I'm saying, that many of these facets do improve student success. It's not a question of does it anymore. It's how are we going to make that happen? And that's what I'm here to urge and support in SB 13. As we saw earlier with the presentation of the other two bills, the rates for Native American graduation are dismal. And for me, that's heartbreaking, because I can think about half of my classmates who maybe didn't graduate with me on time, and knowing their potential, because we grew up together. We all came from the same place, and even further back, we come from the same land. And for those rates to be there is just, it's unreal. And it's heartbreaking to see that potential go to the wayside. So SB 13 does offer a holistic approach to this problem that we're facing, not just in Native country, but in our society. And I continue to emphasize this is a societal problem. It's not just a Native problem. It's not just a reservation problem, but it is a societal problem. It's a statewide problem. And that brings me to our borders. I would strongly urge that NIMIPU are included into this curriculum when it is passed, because that's part of the history. These borders did not exist. We did not just stop at the Snake River and not cross and go to the Wallawas and to the beautiful land that I love to go and fish and camp and practice our traditional ways. We are part of Oregon's land base, and I would encourage that be included into the curriculum as well. Also, I would encourage the curriculum to focus on cultural values. As again, I've stated, it's a societal problem, and some of the elders expressed earlier, that kids can't sit there and listen. Kids, and I'm saying this because I'm not much older than the kids that I see, and I know I was just like them, aren't as respectful. You know, we've lost a lot of those foundational cultural values that our traditions and our way of life depended on, and they were tied to nature. And for me, I'm a Nez Perce woman, and I have my degree in chemistry, and now I'm in STEM education, and statistically, I'm almost a miracle, and I don't want to be the only one, and I know I'm not, and I think tying in this curriculum has the potential to foster more of our Native people to become scientists and engineers, mathematicians, and contribute to our society on a broader scale than just on a reservation. But not only that, but to return to our reservations and continue to uplift our people and sit at the table with policymakers at a federal and state level and be able to communicate our ideas and also have that mutual respect while we are at the table. And I think building our students' cultural identity with the support of SB 13 can help us achieve those levels of success that I can see we can grasp, but they're still a little ways off, and we need to continue to build up our youth in those ways. And lastly, like was stated, you know, our people are resilient. Our people have adapted over several generations right outside this door. 10,000 years of history of our people have been here on these lands, and that knowledge is embedded in our blood. But that's not for us just to keep as Native people, but to also share with the broader society that's now here on our lands. And it's a huge issue of reconciliation that needs to be addressed, and SB 13 has the potential to be a platform for that for the Native people of this land and the society that now lives on it. So, Makis Katsialia, thank you.
Thank you very much. Very articulate. And I think they've got new research that you've made a little longer than 10,000 years.
Yeah.
Even down in your part, they just have some new.
Out on the sign, it only says 10,000.
I know. Anyway, thank you.
Thank
for
you.
That. So, come on up. It can be our people here at the end. They got a fourth chair just so you could have a chair. That's really nice.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, we would like to form a panel of our own.
Yes,
and
it sounds great.
Everybody that's here would like to have an opportunity to speak, and we
as long
promise
as
to be
I'm here
brief.
Forever. I'm here
we
forever.
We promise to be brief. You've been extremely kind.
I promised people I'd be here until it was done, even if they kicked me out.
Yep. And we want to give April and Ramona an opportunity to share some thoughts. Then I'll reflect and talk about next steps, and then Lindsay will close this panel for us.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm going to be very brief. And as my constituents, I said I wasn't going to come up here because I really wanted to have them have the opportunity to share their voice. And ODE has already submitted our written testimony. I guess I would just remind folks, again, my name is April Campbell. My apologies. I'm the Indian Education Specialist for the Oregon Department of Education. I'm also a member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. And I'm so excited today because we got to kick it off with our governor, then we got to kick it off with our Oregon tribal leaders, and then all of our Oregon natives and other constituents. And I just want to thank everyone for sharing their stories, both personal and moving. And I encourage you guys to support this bill, Senate Bill 13. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and committee members. For the record, my name is Ramona Halcombe. I am the Indian Education Specialist for ODE, but I am going to have several hats. I'm also an enrolled member of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. In my role as Indian Education Specialist, I have the distinct privilege, yet I feel responsibility when I go and visit the federally recognized tribes in Oregon. At one tribe, it was shared that their reading level for third grade was 24%. I don't need to tell you that the third grade reading comprehension is the number one indicator of success. With another tribe, we shared that last year Native American students had 56% graduation rate, and the year before that was 54%, and well, that is moving in the right direction. I can't look at my relatives in the eye and say failing 44% of our students is acceptable, and I don't think you feel that way as well. I feel that passing Senate Bill 13 will help rectify some of those numbers and will help collaborate with the tribes, working with them as far as giving their students, as you've heard, pride, engaging curriculum that will keep them in school. And then lastly, I'd like to say, as a great grandma, my great granddaughter started kindergarten this year, and she's so excited. And I've been in education for 25 years, and I can only hope and pray that that excitement will remain. And it will only remain if she can see herself in the curriculum. So I urge you to pass Senate Bill 13. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Salam Noor, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, Oregon Department of Education. I first want to say thank you for extending the time and giving all of us the opportunity to be heard and to express our enthusiasm and excitement about this bill and what it has to offer. I also want to express appreciation to our tribal leaders and members that testified on behalf of the bill for their support. And I want to say that they've been a big part of developing the concept and the bill that's before you from the beginning. And that is really a credit to their dedication and commitment and perseverance to see this come through with the support and leadership of April and Ramona here that we are very happy to have in the department and help guide our work in this area in very thoughtful and meaningful ways. So I indicated earlier that we're here to hear, to listen and hear, and I think we all heard clear reflections on the part of the testimonies for the need of this curriculum in our state. There is tremendous need that has great value to tribal students and also has tremendous value to all Oregonian students and adults alike. So this is something that is very much needed, as we all have heard, and there's tremendous support for it and clarity relative to its purpose and its significance and potential collective impact. From the department's perspective, we are really excited to work with the tribes collaboratively and to engage in direct consultation. We take consultation very seriously. We are respectful of all the 9 confederated tribes and all Native Americans in the state of Oregon. And we intentionally will engage in consultation relative to the overall curriculum framework, but the specific components that pertain directly to every tribe and every aspect of Native history. And we will do that as we develop and implement this K-12 historically accurate, culturally embedded, responsive, and place-based curriculum. So we appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today and look forward to seeing this work hopefully move forward and come to fruition. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, again, for the record, Lindsay Capps, Chief Education Officer. I want to thank both you and the Vice Chair and the committee for your extended time today to hear the voices in this room, and certainly thank our tribal chairs and the broader community that's come out today to share their perspectives. I just want to add one thing to Salam's statement around further consultation to say that this particular policy is part of a much broader conversation that we're having. Not only through our government-to-government relationship with our sovereign nations, but in some work that every education agency has been engaged in across the state over the last 6 or more months, having community conversations with our tribal governments, with school leaders across the state. And that focus is really about how do we implement together and partner to make sure that the tenets of our American Indian Alaska Native State Plan can be put into action. This is one piece which builds on top of work that has been happening in our communities around attendance, which is now reflected in a more broad way in the graduation bill you heard today. And it is certainly work that can be supported through more culturally responsive teaching, but we look forward to the opportunity to continue to update this committee on that broader work. But I will tell you there is, I think, certainly growing enthusiasm both within our tribal communities as well as among school leaders about the opportunity here to better engage our students and serve all of our children. So we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comments from that you would like to share before the end? Because I probably say
no. It's been a wonderful afternoon. We've heard so many different voices with so many different perspectives. It's been great. I'm glad you all had the strength to sit through it too, right?
And I guess I'll say the last thing that I'll say. My family's had a long history with tribes, about 100 and some years. Not a long history, history's died, in Washington mostly. And one of my best teachers was a Native young man. When I first did my student teaching in Port Angeles, Washington, which is where I grew up, and I was teaching in a middle school. That was all of the kids from the Elwha Reservation attended that middle school. And I had graduated from Port Angeles High School, and it always shocked me that I had a lot of friends when I was in elementary school who were Native, and I didn't have a whole lot of high school kids that graduated with were Native, and I didn't understand that, and I came back as this new educator, right? And I'd worked at the mill there, and one of the guys I worked with was a tribal leader from the Elwha tribe, and I was having this problem with this kid because he was really bright. I mean, he was one of my best math students. I'm a math student. He's a really great math student, but he fails every test, and it was just driving me absolutely crazy, and so I went and talked to this guy from the mill, and I asked him, what's going on here? And he said, well, the person you picked out, he's going to be a tribal leader. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. You know, his family, he'll be a tribal leader at some point. And I said, if you look around the room, you will find that there are a lot of tribal kids in that classroom. And that when he gets his test back, he lays it right out on for everybody to see. Because academics are not that big for him. He's a great athlete, but he wasn't going to get through high school because he wasn't going to pass any classes. But for one of those other kids to recognize, because they all knew he was the smartest kid in the class, for them to see that they did better than him was more important for him than it was for him to get a grade. And it was a really rude awakening for me to understand that cultures are really different, and our culture for success is very much different than some of our Native cultures with respect to respect for each other, doing the other kinds of things, making other people feel better, not worrying about some of those kinds of things. And it helped me understand that so many of those kids that didn't make it through. It wasn't had anything to do with intelligence, had nothing to do with other things. It had to do with what was really important to them. And it was hard. I keep working at it with the Coquilles. I worked with the Confederated Tribes. I was a teacher in Coos Bay. I mean, it's just what understanding and what culturally responsible practices are is not, it's more about respect all the time and trying to dig in and find out what's going on. Because for me, I told him he didn't have to take any more tests, which made him a little upset. But I told, you have to help other kids. And he was really amazing at doing that. But we don't take time a lot of times, and we have classes of 30. It's really hard to do that, to really understand each of those kids and the motivations that are there in them and how to figure out doing that. Cultural education like this is the kind of stuff that gives teachers the tools to know what to look for and how to embrace those other cultures and the things, because they teach us a lot more about ourselves sometimes than they teach about that culture. And I'm really happy to be on this committee. I'm happy that this bill came, that you guys put it forward. And I'm really pleased with all of the people who stayed, like you said, and were willing to sit there through this and made sure you told your stories, because we need to hear it more, and not just with the Native population, but with all of our ethnic people in our states. And if we get this right, it'll be right for all of them, too. And we have to change these numbers. So, again, thank you very much, and thanks for all being here. And I guess I'll close all of the public hearings, because we had them all open. So we'll close all the public hearings, and pardon? Want to adjourn? Really? We're having such a big fun time here together. I can't believe she wants to adjourn. Thank you, Senator Lithicum, for being here with us. And I know if you go next door down to A, you'll see a couple of the committee members. They're down there having a joint committee. So with that, we're going to close this public hearing. Thank you very much. And the Education Committee.